This is the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! There it is. We will never, ever, 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 ever again have to listen to that pig-eyed, jug-eared, hateful, vile, vitriolic, filthy little lout who occupies the people's house at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue ever again give a State of the Union address. It's over. Somebody send Bob Dylan out on the stage to play It's All Over, Baby Blue, and walk back off, huh? Okay? Yeah, good. Celebrate. Celebrate, America. Welcome to Head On for this Tuesday evening, the 29th day of January. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid, like anybody else is going to do this. And I'm glad to have you along. Glad to have you sharing your time with us this evening. And I hope your time you will find to have been well spent. About 2 minutes past the hour, and I want to go straight to the phones because we have a guest with us on the phone lines right now, all the way from a remote, undisclosed location somewhere in Western Europe. We have with us Heather Vokush. Heather's been on the program in the past. You know, she is an activist, progressive activist, the author of the Progressive Handbook. And Heather is here to talk a little bit about this phenomenon, and I got to admit, I'm not a Facebook guy, so I don't know so much. But this phenomenon going on Facebook with the website, something along the lines of, I bet I can get, I can find a million people who hate George Bush. And you know what? They got their millionth. And Heather has an offer that actually goes along with that phenomenon. Heather, welcome to the program. It's so good to talk to you again. It's been entirely too long.
It sure has, and thank you so much for having me back on, Bob. I appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. Tell us a little bit about this phenomenon, if you would, please. This business of I can find a million people who hate George Bush.
Yeah, Facebook is this social networking site, and they have groups on it. I mean, it's got probably, I mean, who knows how many tens of millions of people are on this site. It's kind of like MySpace for grown-ups kind of thing. And a California high school student started a group on September 15th, 2007. And it was, as you said, I bet I can find a million people who dislike George Bush. And what happened is on Sunday, they got their million. And to help them celebrate, what I did is I'm giving free downloads of both of my books for the next 2 weeks. Absolutely free.
And oh, wow.
The point is, yeah, yeah, and the point is to encourage ongoing armchair activism. Now, the whole problem, though, is that we're having a really hard time letting people know about this because Facebook will not allow the administrators of this huge group to send out an email to their members. And so this thing is just sitting there online, and nobody knows about it. And so what I entirely would like to invite all of your listeners to do is head over to the site that I'm going to give you. And, you can see it. You can download both of the books. I've also set up, I should explain what these books are. It's called The Progressive Handbook, Get the Facts and Make a Difference Now. Both books hit Amazon's bestseller list in December, Amazon's political activism bestseller list in December 2007. And they hit the top 10, and volume 1 hit number 1. It was just updated in November 2007. So they're brand new. They're ragers. And what they do is they go through the rollbacks under Bush, and then they talk about what you can do about it. It gives activism tips. And what's available right now for absolutely free, anybody who wants to download them can, but again, it's available only for 11 more days, is both books, the complete book. So that's two possible downloads. And then what you can also do is I put all of the action, like the take action stuff, pages of the book, and put them into hyperlinked files that you can also download. That means, for example, in the environment chapter, it talks about mountaintop removal, you know.
Oh, wow.
You know, and the crisis there and what's going on in Virginia and all of that. And you can just go to that section, and then you can just click on the links in order to take activity. You don't have to type all this into your computer, you know what I mean? The other chapters in the books deal with education, mainstream media, women's issues, U.S. weapons of mass destruction, which we don't talk about nearly enough, the horrible weapons that we're creating,
right.
Environments, and that's where the mountaintop removal comes in, foreign policy, and elections and voting. So I'm here to invite every single person who's listening to head on over to this URL that I'll give you.
Oh, that was very cleverly done, head on over.
Yeah, I practiced that one. And to send a URL to all of your friends, because the whole thing is going to finish in about 11 days. So.
Okay, well, let's start with the URL.
Yeah, so www.progressiveshandbook.com, and that's progressiveshandbook.com. You can just go there, and then there's a link that you can click to the page, or go to progressiveshandbook.com/ and then 1,000,000. That's 1,600, no commas. And that's it. Yeah, and then it takes you to this page and download away and tell all of your friends.
I am very much looking forward to reading them both, Heather. It seems like this would be something very handy to have on hand as we advance into the political season. Is that part of the process or part of your thinking?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Bob. That was the whole point. Because I think it's just not enough to say, okay, well, we have big problems. You know, what we need to do, especially now as we're heading into this really critical time, is to say, okay, well, what can we do about this stuff? And I, for one, do not believe that it's enough to say, okay, well, the Democrats are going to hopefully get in 2008 and then all of our problems will go away. I think that we need to keep, you know, a fire under all of the candidates, even our most preferred ones, about the issues that we care about the most. And, you know, that it's really easy to do that. Even if you work really hard during the day, you know, who knows how many jobs, come home, deal with, you know, dinner, deal with the kids. If you've got 5 minutes at night, there's really wonderful and very effective things that you can do within that 5 minutes. And that's the whole point of these books, is you can get information and take action. And if all of us do that, wow, I mean, we can make totally a huge difference this year.
Do you, from your personal standpoint, Heather, do you have a laundry list of your own that that you've prioritized? Is there problem A and problem B for you?
In terms of Which
in terms of activism, in terms of the problems that must be solved on the media, are there more immediate problems than are some problems more immediate than others? For instance,
well, that's a good question. Actually, you know, I'm a 20-year career educator, and I firmly believe that just if we have information, and if we have correct information, and if we take these things personally, then action can take place. And so that goes across the board. So I'm not going to say, oh, well, it's global warming, or it's Iraq, or it's this, or it's that. I think the number one problem is we don't have, you know, enough information, and we also don't know what we can do about the problem. Now, of course, you know, every night you're really helping to spread correct information, and that is so helpful. You know, but I think the second hand, too, is to talk about what we can do to make a difference. And as a corollary to that, I think it's really important that we take these issues personally. You know, again, mountain top removal mining. You know, it's like, my goodness, how this has completely affected Virginia and other states, you know, pollution and creating moonscapes out of these beautiful mountains. That's so completely, absolutely, there's no way that should be allowed to be happening. And everybody across the country should be angry about that. We can talk about global warming. We can talk about Iraq, education, whatever. If we get correct information and learn how to fight back, that, I think, is the number one thing, at least for me, that I feel so passionate about that I want to spread the idea.
Well, I believe you, I hope you will be pleased to know, I'm informed by one of our news ninjas, that links to the page will be on this evening's show post, and they're going up even as we speak. So I hope everyone will take advantage of this offer that you've made, which is very generous, to let people have this. You know, the Progressive's Handbook, as you said, it did very, very well on the list over at Amazon. Have you seen it bear fruit, Heather?
Do you mean this most recent campaign?
Yes.
Or?
Yes. Well, have you seen the Progressive's Handbook bear fruit? Do you hear back from people saying, you know, I'm doing this now, or this really changed the way I thought about, you know, my ability to participate, my ability to make a difference?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Absolutely, absolutely. I get emails all the time. And so from the people who have actually bought the book, which was why I thought, okay, well, I want to just give the book away then. You know, if it is that effective, let's just get it out there. You know, maybe this is a little bit of a financial loss for me, but who cares? You know, if the message gets out. The problem now is that we've set up this beautiful page, and Facebook won't allow us to send it to the million members of this group. And so it's kind of like, oh, man. You know?
Is there any way to get to that page at all? The Facebook page?
Oh, well, actually, you have to set up a Facebook account. It takes 5 minutes. And then you just put into their, well, it's supposed to be that you put into their search engine the name of the group. And again, it's called, I Bet I Can Find a Million People Who Dislike George Bush. Now, that's another interesting thing, because on Sunday, when right before this was hitting a million, there's so many people who are really watching this. Well, I would say, I don't know, 4 hours before it hit, all of a sudden you couldn't find this group in their search engine. And it was gone for a day. It came back, and now it's gone again. And so some of us are wondering, is this some kind of accident? Or, you know,
that's very strange.
Yes, I would say so. You know, and I've had people email me saying, hey, I want to look up this group, but for some, it's not in the search engine. And so that's another thing that it's like, okay, I'm not sure what's going on there. But the bottom line is, if you want to get the goodies, you don't have to join Facebook. That's Facebook. All you have to do is head over to progressivehandbook.com/a million and download your goodies and tell all of your friends and post the link on any listservs or sites or send it out to your mailing list, anything. We've got, it was only for 2 weeks, and we've got maybe, I'd say, 11 days, something like that left.
Okay. And is the are you keeping track of how many copies are going out?
Well, unfortunately, again, the thing is that nobody knows about this page. It's just like sitting there quietly. And so far, I would say it's gotten, oh, I don't know, maybe 10,000 hits or something like that. But that's nothing compared to what it could be. And the problem is, we just need to get the word out that it's there. I'm hoping that, you know, within 11 days, it will have just spread far and wide. And everybody who's listening, you can totally help out with that.
Well, we certainly will. With it going up on the network webpage, and we encourage anybody who has a blog or a web page of their own to make this known, because we're not talking about never mind what we're not talking about. We're talking about a tool here, and this is I can't emphasize enough, because I've seen excerpts and such. This is a means of empowering one's own activist spirit. Is that a fair description, Heather?
Yeah, I'd say that definitely is a fair description. And also, you know, if you're only interested in one area, for example, I mean, right now, a lot of people, of course, are very interested in elections and voting. Well, you can only just go, if you only want to look at that chapter, you can go to that chapter. But, for example, one of the tips that's available is, you know, you can track the corporate cash behind politicians. You can learn how to access your lawmakers' personal financial information and determine their financial ties to industries and lobbies. The information is completely available on the web under opensecrets.org. For example, that's one of the really easy tips that might just, you know, kind of change your mind about who you're voting for, and it takes you 5 minutes, and it gives you really critical information. Another thing under the Weapons of Mass Destruction chapter, for example, I mean, for me, I find that topic fascinating, the U.S. Weapons of Mass Destruction. There's a site that you can go to locate the Weapons of Mass Destruction plants nearest you, and this is called sunshine-project.org. Right there, they've got a map, and you can find out if there's a biological or chemical weapons plant near you, because a lot of times they're operating secretly. But this information is available. And so I believe the site Alternet said that the books are part encyclopedia and part self-defense manual. So because they just list these really easy, simple things that we can do basically to take back power. And that's got to be empowering on a lot of different levels.
I hope it is. And for my part, I hope that the one thing that me and that mouse in my pocket. The one thing that I've tried to get across so many times, Heather, is that we cannot afford to do what the other side did. We cannot afford to be single-issue people. So I encourage people to get the whole thing and prepare to be surprised, prepare to be amazed, prepare to be shocked when you find out the variety of places where you can where you can take a stand, where you can have a role, and where you can be a part of what we keep preaching, be a part of the solution. Because, I don't know, the way I express it, Heather, is to say that environmentalists need to learn that labor is their issue. Labor people need to learn that feminism is their issue. Feminists need to learn that the sexual equality and LGBT issues are their issue, because it's all part of a common whole. Because any time that the other side can get a foothold in any one of those issues, they're not content to work against that issue only. They always use it as a beachhead for marching on another one, and they've figured out that very well. Us, I don't think so, not so much. So I'm hoping people will use your book as a tool by which to, I guess, make a synergistic whole of the whole idea of everything that matters in progressivism?
That's a really, really good point, and I couldn't agree with you more. For me, what was interesting in researching these books, I mean, this took years, was exactly what you just said. And, you know, if we're spending tens and tens of billions of dollars every year on creating U.S. weapons of mass destruction, well, of course, that money is not going to go into education, and that money is not going to go into, you know, saving the environment, for example. And so these issues are so interlinked, but it's that connection that we, you know, don't really look at, or at least the media doesn't help us to find. There's a great quote by Gloria Steinem, since you mentioned our feminist stuff. It says, "The truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off." And I think the bottom line is, when we get accurate information, and as such as is in these books, okay, you know, it makes you angry, but that's okay. If it's a positive anger, and then you're given examples of things that you can do immediately, just, you know, 5 minutes a day to kind of make things better and to take back power. And so, yeah, you're right. These things are aggravating, and they're not going to make you feel quiet. But the cool thing is that you know you're helping, and you're doing that for your kids and your community and you know, for the future of our world, not to get too dramatic.
Sure.
So, yeah.
But now, of course, I remember our previous conversations, and I know that you're one to practice what she preaches. What's on your radar right now? Any new projects? What are you working at?
Well, this one right now has kept me extremely busy, you know, first setting this up because it was really quick, and then also, you know, getting this out because now we've got this beautiful page and nobody knows about it. So right now this has 100% of my energy. But the article that I will be writing next and that I have unfortunately put off is something that actually I believe that we talked about a little bit last time, and that is the whole Edgewood arsenal. This is the U.S. military testing biological and chemical weapons on its own, on you know, army members, military members. And some of the guys now are able to speak because the, you know, quiet period has ended. And for me, this is just an incredible issue about the military testing these horrible weapons on our service members. This is, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And so that is the article that I'm going to be writing next. It, I mean, it has a lot of implications for today. And, you know, these guys got absolutely no support. They went to the Army and military and said, hey, I'm sick. I don't understand. I have these weird cancers and stuff. And they were told it was in their head. They suffered in silence for decades and died, you know. And only now has the military said, well, yeah, you're right. We did those tests on you. Oh, well, bummer. So this is going to be the next article.
Well, I hope you'll give us a ring and a heads up when you put it out. Heather, it's such a joy to talk to you, and I'm sorry it's been such a long time. I hope it won't be such a long period of time between now and our next conversation.
It definitely won't, and thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, Bob.
It's absolutely my joy, and a very, very good evening to you, and do keep us abreast of, I hope this is a huge success, and I hope maybe you can call back in, about 12 days and say, hey, you know, a million people got hold of the file.
Okay, super.
All right.
Thank you so much, and I'll definitely be back in touch.
Okay, take care, Heather.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Heather Vokish, you can go to her website. It's Heather Vokish, HeatherVokusch.com. I think she would far prefer, however, that you go to Progressives, Progressives, handbook, just like it sounds, .com/1000000. And there is a free offer there for the Progressives Handbook. It has been very well received. And, you know, I love free stuff. And this is pretty cool free stuff because it is very encyclopedic. It's a great, you know, I don't know, can you have a desk reference on a computer? It's the 21st century equivalent of a desk reference for progressive activism. And so I very, very much hope that you will avail yourself of the offer. If you've got a blog, if you've got a website, if you've got friends who are progressive, who have open minds, who are thinkers, who are activist-oriented, who, you know, maybe, as she said, are pressed for time and can only do something that takes a couple of minutes at best a day out of a very, very busy day such as we tend to have in here in this once great nation. Let them know that this is there. We have to have, well, it's no fun going into a gunfight with a knife now, is it? And the other side is certainly not going to bring a knife to a gunfight. No. They'll bring a howitzer to a gunfight. So we have to use every tool that is available to us. I hope you'll avail yourself of Heather's offer. 23 minutes past the hour, and there is, as usual, a ton of stuff. How much of it we will get to is entirely up to you. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. That's toll-free, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you've got your own long-distance unlimited dialing plan, it's 304-658-5453. You can save us a couple of bucks in the process by dialing that way. But any way you want to get in touch, I heartily encourage you to do so. Now that the State of the Union is, in fact, mercifully over, and isn't it a refreshing thought to know, as an American, that you will never have to listen to George Bush or see him deliver another one of those ever, 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 ever again? There was a sort of an unshackling moment when I watched that last night. A little dose of freedom. Now, the question is whether we will hear some other form of insanity come January of next year. And that depends on the ability of Democrats to come together, put aside the petty bickering, put aside the pathetic squabbling, put aside the infighting and the snarking over largely meaningless issues, and support whoever it is that's running in November, even if you have to hold your nose to do it. Or you can have McCain. Or Romney. Or, hey, our personal favorite, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Ah, you're going to love this. You know, because we've talked about it in the past, and I'm not going to save this for prayer meeting because it is and it ain't that kind of material. But you know that not too awfully long back, a Republican senator from Iowa, whose motives I am entirely skeptical of, but whom I will give the benefit of the doubt for the time being, a guy named Charles Grassley, of Iowa. He's the ranking Republican on the Senate Finance Committee. Well, he's investigating, as you know, six of these God will love you better if you give me more money, so-called ministries, televangelism ministries. And those ministries have largely told Senator Chuck Grassley to go piss up a rope in regard to his request for their financial information. Grassley has basically alleged that there is information that they have used their tax-exempt status as churches to shield lavish lifestyles. Creflo Dollar, for instance, as we've mentioned, has a couple of Rolls Royces. Benny Hinn flies around in brand new jets. I think he calls it Dove One, if I recall what the information that Peter Godbold put out about Benny Hinn. Well, another of those is Kenneth Copeland. And he has indeed told Senator Charles Grassley to go piss up a rope. He has said, and this is a quote, it comes from his 2008 Ministers Conference. Yeah, I guess he's like some sort of right-wing fundamentalist pope, because he has ministers underneath him. His 2008 Ministers Conference, Copeland declared jihad against Senator Grassley. Why? Well, he said that the documents Senator Grassley wants to see belong to God. What did he say? Here's what he said. Quote, "You can go get a subpoena and I won't give it to you. It's not yours, it's God's, and you're not going to get it, and that's something I'll go to prison over, so just get over it. You want to get in a faith fight with me? Why, just come on, but I'm going to warn you. I fight dirty. I got somebody else does my fighting for me. I just sit back and watch. Ha! Hallelujah, praise Jesus. Ha!" Really? I'm going to warn you, I fight dirty. What are you going to do, Brother Copeland, you Christian, you? You going to have Senator Grassley killed? Is that what you're saying, buddy? Sounds to me like you're threatening the senator. You know, if anybody else, any normal people who weren't multimillionaires doing the con job and the charlatan act on otherwise ignorant people. If it was anybody but you, they'd be in prison for a comment like that, threatening a senator that way. But not you, because you miserable con artist, you shameless religion whore, you who hides behind the skirts of the First Amendment and the tax code so that you can be wealthier than the wealthiest man Christ Jesus ever criticized, Brother Copeland. You get away with it because you're part of the institutional religion dodge. Well, I started telling you about this because there's a radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckstaby connection. Oh, yes, brethren and sistren, there certainly is. What even Think Progress describes as former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, what have I got to do? Do I have to stand on the rooftop and scream? He's not former Governor Mike Huckabee. He is current fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. Well, you heard how filthy that thing was. You can get a subpoena and I won't give it to you. It's not yours. It's God's. And you're not going to get it. And that's something I'll go to prison over. Just get over it. Mike Huckabee wants to be president of the United States. Copeland got a letter, after Copeland got his letter from Grassley, and again, you can find this all at thinkprogress.org. Copeland got on the phone because he's apparently got the hotline straight to Mike Huckabee, which should be enough to give you the blind shivers, and offered him a, quote, chance to break his association with Kenneth Copeland. Copeland reported Huckabee's response. He said Huckabee, quote, hollered at me on the phone. He said, are you kidding me? Why should I stand with them and not with you? They've only got an 11% approval rating. Copeland said of Huckabee, yeah, that's my man. Think Progress goes on to note that Huckabee was investigated by the State Ethics Committee in Arkansas. I didn't know they had one. At least 14 times. Because Huckabee had this ugly little habit of using his official position to enrich his lavish lifestyle. One year he reported $112,000 in gifts, nearly double his $67,000 salary. So you know where Mike Huckabee stands. You want that in the White House? You want Giuliani? Well, Giuliani may sing his swan song after Florida's results come in. You want Romney? You want McCain? Insane McCain? Who every time, despite his maverick reputation, every time he's been called upon to vote with the Republicans and the so-called hardcore neocons, he has done so? You want him? Well, all you got to do is stay home next November, and baby, you can have him. You just stay home next November. You keep calling Hillary Clinton Hitlery. You keep making Obama jokes. Keep being silent when some right-wing freak talks about Edwards' hair. You stay home next November, and come the day after the election, I'll be happy to ask you how content you are with another 4 years of George W. Bush. Because that's what you get. You don't like Hillary? Fine. You don't like Obama? Fine. You don't like Edwards? Fine. Does that determine the fact that you do, in fact, like the idea of a McCain presidency? A Romney presidency? You're going to stay home and let some guy who believes his underwear is magic run the country? You're going to stay home and make it possible for a radical fundamentalist cleric like Mike Huckabee to take it the next step that, from what George W. Bush has done? George W. Bush flung the doors of the White House wide open to the right-wing religion industry. Huckabee will take the doors off the hinges. You just stay home. You stay home. Because the stakes are that high. I'm going to sit here and tell you that Hillary or Obama or even Edwards is the neatest thing since sliced bread? No, I'm not, because I'm reality-based. But I will tell you that there's a lot at stake, and no, no, just as Ralph Nader said there was no difference between Al Gore and George W. Bush and turned out to be, you know, pretty much insanely wrong, so too there is a difference between a Clinton or an Obama and certainly an Edwards and freaks like McCain and Romney and Giuliani and Huckabee and Ron Paul. Those are the stakes. Like them, don't like them, fine. But that's emotionalism. Your intellect understands that those are the stakes. Stay home and clip your toenails and watch America go down the toilet further, faster. Because, see, it could well be that we're on the way down the toilet whether we like it or not. But the question is the speed of the water and whether or not there's anything floating to hang on to. The answer with a McCain, a Giuliani, a Romney, or a Paul is that no, and the water will go faster down the toilet than you've ever imagined. With a Democrat, we have some semblance of hope. And we have an ability to keep on pushing. McCain is not going to listen when you say end the war. Because he's already told you, I'll end the war in 50 years or 100 maybe. Romney? Mm-mm. War's good. Giuliani? Mm-mm. War lover. Huckabee? War lover. Ron Paul? Says he's not. Don't believe him. He's a con artist. Possibly a bigger con artist than any of those others, simply because he has tried to leverage progressive hopes for an end to the war to advance his own political agenda. So I'm sorry, those are the choices. I want publicly financed election campaigns. I'm sick to death of the process that we're dealing with right now. I'm sick to death of multimillionaires taking the money of working people, $5, $10, $15, $50, and $100 at a time, and turning around and pumping it back into the media conglomerates that hate them, especially if they're so-called liberals or progressives. I want that system fixed, because God knows it's broken. I want real health care reform. You stay home, there's not even any hope of it. Not even any hope. It'll be more of that silly crap that we got out of George Bush last night about health care. It'll be more of the silly hypocrisy about earmarks. So, now make your choice. It seems to me a pretty stark one. It's entirely up to you. So, I don't know. Please, I implore you, as Mark Levine did. Take to heart that old, old maxim. If we do not hang together, we shall surely hang separately. And this isn't because, you know, ooh, I want to be, I'm a Democrat and I want to win. No, no. This is because I am sick to death of being kicked. I'm not going to feel like I've won anything until I start seeing action. But you do know that your progressivism, your liberalism, your activism has a hope as long as there's a Democrat in the White House and Democratic control of Congress. It means absolutely bupkis if Republicans control any of those houses. And by the way, if a Republican gets into the White House, as I have repeatedly been stating, you can kiss what is remaining of your civil liberties goodbye, baby, because it is gone with the next Supreme Court appointment. Sorry. Just is. Just saying. And to the phones we go. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, this is Albert.
Hey, Albert, what's up?
Well, you got me, Bob. You got me. You know, that eloquence, just totally pure sanity that you just excluded is just, it's too much for me. And you got me. I got you.
No, you're being a smart aleck, Albert.
Yeah, no, I'm serious. I mean, you're right. And, you know, I think it's even more important even is for us to not sit there and whatever Democrat gets in and, you know, when you say hang together, hang separately, you can't go anywhere with that. I mean, that's the facts right there. But I think it's more important for us to even more important than, you know, getting a Democrat in office, which I think is going to be pretty easy, personally. I mean, look at Bush. I mean, please. It's going to be easy. It's going to be cake. But
that's what we thought when Gore was running against Bush, too. Need I say more?
Yeah, no, I know. But I don't know if we could stomach another one of those. I think they'd do something like that. They'd ignite the keg. I mean, you can't look at a guy with, you know, what has he got, 20% of approval rating? I mean, most of the Americans didn't even realize anything was happening. I mean, he's like, you're still here? I mean, it's like, you know, you haven't left yet. I mean, people, I think he's really, I mean, even Republicans don't even like the guy, and that's a sad state of affairs. I mean, the only ones that do are the ones that, you know, need him to...
Well, for heaven's sakes, consider what Heather said a few minutes ago. A teenage high school student in California started a Facebook site in September 2007 called I Bet I Can Find a Million People Who Dislike George Bush. Like, he crossed that line on Facebook alone last Sunday.
Oh, yeah, there ain't no doubt about it. I mean, he's... Yeah, find a million that like him, as someone said on the chat room. I mean, I'd be impressed. I'd be impressed with that. I mean, but, you know, I really think, you know, whatever it is that happens, you know, we're going to get a president in, and, of course, my kids, oh, daddy's on the phone. Anyway, whatever we get in, you know, I think it's going to be the main responsibility is going to be for us to really seriously not go, oh, we got one, okay, everyone back to sleep.
Yeah, right. No. This isn't the dressing room or the locker room of a World Series champion and we spray each other with champagne and go home. It's the same thing I said about the 2006 congressional elections. It is, finally, you have a chance to crank up the heat. You know, I'm reminded and I'm proud of the fact that Speaker Pelosi was made absolutely upside down pissed off by virtue of the fact that there were a bunch of people militating for impeachment outside her home, and she just really hated it. Remember, she said, if they were homeless, I could just call the cops and have them taken away. But they're protesting. They want impeachment. So they've got the First Amendment, so I have to put up with it. You know what? I want to make all the SOBs put up with it. I want a Democrat in the White House, and I want 10 times as many people demanding an end to the war around the White House the instant of the inauguration, as ever marched on the White House with George W. Bush.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, think about that. I mean, there'd be mostly people like you and I, and, you know, I mean, how could the president, I mean, it would be real hard-pressed to see any kind of clamp down, you know, putting people into old bus terminals and you know, arresting them in zip ties and shooting rubber bullets at them. I mean, once you start shooting your supporters with rubber bullets and, you know, tear gas grenades, that's a whole other level. I mean, that's a whole other level of, you know, of existence for this country. And, you know, maybe that's what it'll take to wake up people, and we can stop with this nonsense with these, you know, hand-selected, you know. And that's the whole thing. I think why people have such a problem, you know, getting behind these people, even though, I mean, you know, the Democrats are, you know, outperforming the Republicans at the polls, you know, what is it, like 2-1?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty impressive.
And that's not just South Carolina. That's I got an email. That is every primary so far.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nice thing. I mean, it's something that it's kind of like having peanut butter and jelly. I kind of figured it's going to be like that. I can't see it losing. I just can't. I mean, the only way if it's stolen, that's it. I mean, and I think after the last two with Bush, I think enough people have gotten it through their thick skulls that of the theft. I mean, I literally went into, somebody hit my wife because we got, you know, we have winter wonderland over here, baby. I mean, it's crazy over here. The snow, the ice, the negative temperatures, it's crazy. So, you know, people hit each other when it comes down to that. Even
oh, you mean like in an automobile hit your wife?
Yeah, hit me on. Yeah, nobody hit her. But yeah, you hit my wife. And
yeah, because if somebody had done that physically, I'd be getting this call from prison, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. You'd hear all the screaming in the background. It wouldn't be my kids. But, you know, he hit my wife, blah, 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 and I wanted to, literally, I mean, it was at the end of the thing, but this guy and I, and, you know, he identified himself as a church member and this and that, but, you know, he actually found out, I think, within our conversation last night, that he's way more liberal than he ever imagined. He thought it was just cynicism. But, I mean, I literally talked to this man from 6 till 12 p.m. My wife is...
Not you.
No, not me. I mean, my wife is still just irate with me that I was gone for so long. And I understand. But, you know, we were talking about things that are important to talk about. It's important to talk to the people that you're around. I think that's most important of even voting, is just having people converse with each other. And I think that's one of the things that's one of the most biggest damages that George Bush did is, you know, well, the first 4 years, I don't think anybody talked to each other. They probably barely said hi to your neighbor, you know, in terms of on the street. And I think it's really important after all this big drought of communication with people, it's important to sit here and, like, talk to people and, you know, let them know how you feel from your heart. And I think once you do that, you know, if you get heart-to-heart with somebody, it's hard for them to sit there and get the political rhetoric, if they have a brain, granted. You know, I mean, if they have a brain, you can't look at it any other way. We actually watched we tried to kind of watch the... State of the Union address, but we knew what he was talking about. This State of the Union is doomed. It's dead. It's over. I mean,
Albert, I cannot begin to tell you what went through my soul when I first got a look at him standing up there behind the podium, and it's 2008, and everything is in ruins, and everything is collapsing around him, and he's still sitting there grinning like a fox eating poop out of a wire brush.
Yeah.
With that stupid, idiotic, moronic little smirk on his face. But you know what that smirk set was, Albert? That wasn't just the usual Bush idiot smirk.
Yeah.
That was the, you suckers, I got away with it. I did more damage to the Constitution and this country in 8 years than Richard Nixon ever thought about. I committed more crimes than Richard Nixon ever thought about. Hell, I made the impeachment of Bill Clinton look stupid, because it was, and I got away with it. And you miserable, gutless, wimpy little Democrats, you wouldn't do a darn thing about it because you're scared of me. You're scared. Yeah. You're a bunch of chickens. And that's what that was, and God, it made me mad.
Oh, it's infuriating. I mean, one of the things that makes that what you just said makes me think about is what Bush, his Poppy Bush said about, I forget the name of the magazine, maybe you remember it, but the interview that he gave after he left office, and basically it was a female reporter, and she kind of got a really candid response from him, and he said something along the lines of, if the American people knew what we did, they'd be hanging us from the light posts. And I think, you know, that came from his father back when he got...
I remember that. I don't remember the publication, but I remember the remark.
Yeah, it was like George Magazine. It wasn't George Magazine, but it was like one of those kind of, you know, inside the Beltway kind of subversive magazines. And I forget which one it is. Spin? Spun? I don't know. I can't keep up with all that stuff. I don't have the money to have a wide variety of periodicals coming to my house every month. But, you know, I think that's when you're really going to see exactly the sentiment that you just, yeah, I mean, because that's what he was doing. And that's, you know, I mean, every time someone applauded, you know, I lost a week of my life. Every time they burst into applause, even though it was the lowest of all time, it still was just like, oh my goodness, how are you people? Like why aren't their police arresting him? And all three of them sitting out there. I mean, Pelosi's sitting out there looking like some, you know, emaciated alien. All these people. I mean, that's the whole thing. When we get a Democrat in, we have to ride on them like a hot dog. I mean, we have to get on them and just sit there. We have to reverse so much damage. I mean, we can't just let a Democrat get in there, you know, especially I think that's one of the fears is like, oh, I don't want to see Clinton. I don't want to see this. I don't want to see that because they're just corporate this. They're just part of the system. They're just part of the this. And I think that's what people fear. And if we let someone go in there and not ride them and to reverse a lot of this garbage and these executive orders and all this junk that Bush has set up, you know, if we don't do that, and they start using it against us as well. Or, you know, I don't even want Republicans treated the way we were via Bush. I don't want to see no retribution like that. I just want to see us succeed. I want to see the whole country get better. I want to see, you know, I want my kids to have a future.
I want to see Democrats do what Democrats are good at, Albert, and that is fixing broken Republican stuff. It's what we always have to do.
Yeah, and then you can't even. But that's another big problem. We're so busy fixing the crap, we can't even get anything. You know, we can barely make headway. It's like, you know, instead of making up the time of, you know, a couple miles or whatever, we're barely getting a couple hundred yards because of so much. Bob, I don't even know if you and I or anybody, you know, can in one day list all the damage that this dude's done, that him and his administration has done to this country. I mean. Well, there was a recent article in the newspaper. What are they talking? It was an independent study from all these colleges or what have you, and they found that they on the run up to the war, they told 983 or 63 lies. I mean, like literally told that many lies. You know, and it's like it just amazes me how far the whole. Just how far our entire, I don't know, is it ethics? Is it moral? I mean, I don't even know the term for it. You know, it flips. So, I mean, people flipped out because, you know, Clinton didn't inhale. And then we get this giggling murderer in there. And he's, you know, snorting coke and, you know, drinking quarts of whiskey. And, you know, now we got another one. It's like the whole drug thing is coming up and people are like, people don't care about that, and that's a good thing. I don't think that's a slide. People are allowed to experience life. But where is this going to lead us when we sit here and let all these other... I mean, Bob, you know this. He's done so many bad things, I can't even word them.
No, it beggars our descriptive abilities and our comprehensive abilities to just sit down and try to think of all the vile nastiness that has gone on in the Bush administration. You're absolutely right. And the thing is, most of that's got to be fixed before we can start getting on the wish list, okay? And that's what I'm getting at. Somebody's got to get in there and start fixing it, fixing the broken stuff. For me, job one is end the Iraq occupation. But there's so much more than that. I can't believe, for instance, that the Democratic Congress is going along with this bribe, this Bush administration bribe in an election year of offering everybody $300 to just, you know, shut up, be quiet, here's $300, be quiet. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we had, that's the kind of politics we had in this country, in this state and lots of other places. When, you know, ward healers would drive up and down the hollows with a trunk full of pints of Four Roses right before the election. Yeah, here's your pint. Here's your pint and your $10 bill. Here's the slate. Go vote. And the Democratic Congress is going to pass that stimulus package? Oh, my aching back.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, first of all, I think one of the biggest, this is the issue that nobody's really even addressing, and actually nobody's addressing at all. This is the issue. Our energy. This is why, I mean, Matthew Simmons, and this is a guy who is a Bush advisor, even though I suspect that Bush doesn't listen to him, but he's one of the most successful energy speculators of, you know, of all time, okay? And this guy says, all right, this guy says, and he's an industry bigwig, okay? He says that the world peaked in 2005. That means we peaked energy production, meaning when you're at the top of the mountain of production, there's only one way to go. You can't go any higher. And the problem
And there's no plateau. There's no plateau either, please remember.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't even, you start down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is no plateau, there is no, you know, nice, long, slow, I mean, man, you know, there's not going to be a long, slow descent because demand is ratcheting up faster. The more we produce, the more demand we make. You know, and so we're really literally facing probably, without a doubt, actually, this is bigger than anything humanity's ever faced in 10,000 years, okay? This is the biggest problem. I mean, this makes global warming look like nothing, okay? Because if we don't have cheap energy, if we don't have energy, okay, that's one of the things. People say, oh, you're anti-capitalist, blah, 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 and they talk about capitalism. And then they forget that capitalism needs infinite growth. And for having infinite growth, we need energy. And to have energy, well, it has to be halfway cheap.
Well, wait, let's back up and just sort of state right. This as a sort of an equation or whatever. In order to have infinite growth, you must have infinite energy.
Amen.
And yeah. The only thing approaching infinite energy is the wind and the sun and geothermal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's the rub, Albert. There's the rub. Because if the energy companies could figure out a way to keep you from getting sunlight unless you paid them, we would have the biggest solar power boom the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
That's the problem, though. They can't they can't put a price on the sunshine.
They can't put
a price on the wind because they're looking at it from a purely capitalistic free market model in which the profit comes first. My God, there would be untold bajillions to be made if Exxon would begin diversifying into solar power arrays.
Yeah.
But that involves buying land, that involves infrastructure, and they are all in on black gold, Texas tea right now, and they're not about to think in another direction until their dealer says there ain't no more.
Well, and that's why actually I think honestly, I think that's why, I mean, we have seen record profits from this industry, world record profits from this industry, is because it has been known fact within the industry that we've peaked. And so it's like, well, we need to make as much money now as we possibly can. Now, granted, if we run out of energy and this economy collapses, the money you got isn't worth nothing. You know, I mean, if the energy goes out to the computers that store all your wealth, you know, your electric money, what do you got? You got nothing. You know, so I think one of the things that we really need to consider is, like, it's time for us. I mean, I'd rather see this instead of, you know, a $1,600 check or whatever it is that I'd be getting. You know, I'd rather see, you know, forcing these guys to become legit. You know what I mean? Like, all right, Exxon, well, it's time for you to get into a different business. It's time for, you know, you to take some of them profits that you put, and it's time for you to put them into a nice, you know, Manhattan Project type of thing for us to, you know, either set up us, you know, because it's, what do they? They only make those wafers in, like, two places for solar panels. And, you know, it's like, it's kind of ridiculous, and there's no money really in it because, you know, quite frankly, they're expensive. You know, but the thing, people say, oh, well, you need all this land in order to do it, and you kind of echoed that, but you don't. Because if you really want to think about what you got, everybody has a roof, right?
That's sure do.
There's a sliver, well, so far.
Well, look, yeah, the model that you're talking about there, Albert, reminds me of the way it used to be here on the property where I live. And that is, way back in the day, so to speak, there was no public water that came here, all right?
Yeah.
So the well was absolutely critical, and it was used for all cooking and drinking.
Yep.
And there were two cisterns, big, Mm-hmm. And they were gravity-fed, top to bottom. And there was a house, this house. There was a barn. There were various and sundry outbuildings. And every single one of those buildings, from the house on, was all intensely guttered. And every gutter ran into a network that ran into the cistern.
Hmm.
Because that water was that critical.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got that many roofs, you're not using that much energy in every building. Cover every roof with a solar panel. There you go. Look, as you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, well, you know, I don't want the money so much as I'd like to see. Here's an idea. What do you say we give every American home a voucher that they can't spend anywhere except for the purposes of putting solar on their rooftops and installing solar systems in their homes?
Yeah. Well, watch how fast, you know, watch how fast Exxon tries to jump into that.
Exxon would buy a solar panel manufacturing plant yesterday and start building more.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that maybe not a lot of people even know. I mean, honestly, seriously, I mean, you know, this is one of those things that it's like the rural business development loans. If you live in a small town, you can actually get quite a bit of money. That was one of the good things. I really appreciate that Bill Clinton did that. But what, also another thing that is we do, you do get a huge rebate from the federal government and the state government. At least I don't know what's your state. My state gives 25% off the cost. And the federal government gives you 30 in terms of a tax rebate. You know, so I mean, granted, it is expensive. It isn't cheap. I mean, just to get, you know, solar panels covering my roof would be around $20,000. You know, but if you're looking at 55% taken off of that, you know, and if you're looking at how much you actually spend in electricity a year, which is, I roughly spend, we spend in this house around $2,000, and I try to make everything, lights go off, and I mean, I don't know what to do and except update a few other appliances, but, you know, we spend quite a bit of money if you a year, you know, so if you're looking at around $8,500 after your 55% and all this other stuff, you know, well, the solar panels will pay for themselves in 4 years. And if you actually get, you know, I don't know, I don't know where they cap you in West Virginia or anywhere else, anyone else is listening, but in Wisconsin, they cap us at the, because you're putting energy back into the grid, the electric company has to buy it from you, but they cap us at around $2,000 a year. Now, I know, I don't know about you, but I'd be happy enough just to break even.
Sure.
Not paying electric bills.
Yeah, and have it be a wash.
Yeah, I mean, if I got a check for $5 a month, I'd be even better. You know what I mean? But I think that's one of the things that we really have to wind up doing is we have to decentralize kind of everything. We're going to have to decentralize our power. We're going to have to decentralize our energy production. I mean, you know, people keep talking about, you know, oh, there's no infrastructure for hydrogen. Well, you know, that guy that made the RF frequency, and we have gas stations already, and we already have this kind of stuff. So why don't we just have, you know, solar panels on the gas station, you know, have a little RF frequency and some salt water and have the guy generate and, you know, I mean, granted, it'll cost money, but it won't be like infrastructure like they talk about where pipes and giant plants. Have you seen what Detroit's trying to do when they come up with these systems? Like they're giant fields of, like, hydrogen for hydrogen production.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
I know.
It's ridiculous. We don't need that. We need, like, decentralized in the local community making their own power. Granted, you know, make a co-op type thing, and then you can stock like that. You can make stocks like that. But I don't know. We got a lot of stuff to deal with. I mean, I don't know if we got enough time to deal with it, Bob, in terms of even the next 4 years. I mean, Bush is just trying to put every monkey wrench he possibly can into any type of progress. I mean, that's what they always do. You know, I mean, decentralized, you know, if we could get off the whole oil issue, if we can sit there and get away from this petroleum products as, you know, as our only source of energy, you know, or at least try, at least get it to 50% or something ridiculous like that. I mean, if we could do that, we'd be out of Iraq. That would get us out of Iraq. I mean, let's be honest. The only reason we're not there for democracy, just saying, people saying that we're there for democracy cheapens that word to like sun-baked plastic. It's awful. We are not there for democracy. We're there for energy. We're there to secure the energy source. We're actually also there to make sure the price goes up because it creates instability in the market. So, you know, there's a lot that if we actually start really moving our rear ends to get energy independent from...
To get clean, as it were.
To get clean, exactly. We wouldn't have to worry about giving our troops another $30 billion in body armor. We wouldn't have to waste that money on body armor. We wouldn't. I mean, you know, that's the kinds of things that just blow my mind. We waste so much money on the war. I think the last count I looked, I know there's more money allocated, but so far we've spent $493 billion and change.
Wait, I thought the war was at $1.6 trillion so far.
That's projected. That's what it's going to cost.
Oh,
so far we've spent.
Assuming an end where, though, Albert?
Well, that's the whole deal, and that's why they talk it's even higher. The projected cost is going to be around $2 trillion. But when is it going to end? I mean, and that's the whole thing. You know, I kind of have a gripe. That's my gripe about Hillary. Is, you know, she ain't going to be ending anything. She might withdraw some troops, but we're still having bases there. Our bases are going to be there because we have. That's ours now.
Well, I'll tell you what. You reminded me of something. Let's not hang that one on Hillary quite yet, because I'm looking at something right here. You're going to love it. Headline: Bush issues signing statement on Defense Act, waiving ban on permanent bases in Iraq. That's not gonna, or that's not gonna or might. That's done did it.
One more time, just so I.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'll be a geek. I'll read.
All right.
President Bush yesterday signed the 2008 National Defense Authorization Act after initially rejecting Congress's first version because it would have allegedly opened the Iraqi government to expensive lawsuits. Remember that? Even though he forced Congress to change its original bill, Bush's signature yesterday came with a little-noticed signing statement, thanks professional media, claiming that provisions in the law, quote, could inhibit the president's ability to carry out his constitutional obligations. Congressional Quarterly reports on the provisions Bush plans to disregard. One such provision sets up a commission to probe contracting fraud in Iraq and Afghanistan. Another expands protections for whistleblowers who work for government contractors. A third requires that U.S. intelligence agencies promptly respond to congressional requests for documents. And a fourth bars funding for permanent bases in Iraq and for any action that exercises U.S. control over Iraq's oil money. He issued a signing statement telling Congress to stuff it.
Oh, my God.
So you don't have to worry about whether Hillary's going to have permanent bases in Iraq. George has already said it's going to happen. And the Congress, the so-called Democratic Congress, will roll over and wait for its belly to be scratched.
Oh, Bob. You know, that's, you know, and this is, you know, I know people, maybe the Secret Service is going to come, but, you know, the best thing that would have happened to humanity, literally, is a meteor to have hit that building last night.
I'm waiting for that spy satellite coming down next month to land on the White House.
Well, no, yeah,
because
yeah,
you know when the Russian Mir space station broke up and went through the atmosphere and stuff, that was a controlled fall.
Mm-hmm.
But the National Security Administration, Agent Fred and Agent Bill and Agent Ted and Agent Harold and all their pals are too damn stupid to be able to make that happen with their little spy satellite.
So the
thing's going to tumble. It's the size of a school bus, and it's just going to tumble through the atmosphere, and it's, you know, basically a case of I shoot a satellite into the air, where it lands, I know not where.
And I don't care.
Yeah. What's the old line? I shoot the rocket goes up. What is it? I'm trying to remember.
Don't try. Just let go, and then it comes back to you.
Yeah, it's a joke about Wernher von Braun. It's not my concern, says Wernher von Braun. Where it comes down, it's not my concern, says Wernher von Braun. It's not their concern at the National Security Agency, who's been spying. You know, this is I saw it best described as a Hubble Space Telescope aimed at the world.
Mm.
It's got the kind of optics on it that can pick up hair follicles.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know.
But we're utterly incompetent, we can't keep it there.
Well, it's actually, honestly, just to give a little Yeah, just here's a little offbeat piece of news that just came out of Harvard in terms of space sciences. And one of the things, like you say, yeah, they are dumb because they don't understand what we're in. You know, I often say that these, you know, you sit there and watch a Discovery Channel and think you know what scientists know, and that's what they're telling us, that they know. And that's to the extent of limit. And if you watch that, you're like, and you think that you know, you're misinformed. Because one of the things that happened is they just actually came out, and because they have all these new high-tech satellites out there that, you know, are really actually really quite good. Not one spying on us, the ones that are actually looking at the local solar environment. And they actually found now electrons flowing back towards the sun. See, like, that was one of those things that they said was impossible. It was never going to be. It was never going to happen. And now we have electrons flowing back towards the sun. Now, this creates an entirely new dynamic in terms of space weather. You know, they like to actually confuse us with things like, you know, wind. They call it wind. When really what it is it's a solar current. And, you know, that's what happens is they make these satellites. They try to shield them. They do all this other stuff. But what happened was is there was a disturbance in terms of the magnetosphere, and it probably fried the circuits of this satellite, and that's why it's doomed. It's not quite essentially like their fault, but because they didn't know, and the mainstream science was kind of like, well, this is impossible, when it really is, actually is possible. And, you know, it's what's that old science adage? It's a third-rate theory forbids, a second-rate theory explains after the fact, and a first-rate theory predicts. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been paying attention, and I haven't heard very many mainstream scientists predict anything. All I've been hearing them say is, whoa, we're shocked, we're surprised, we're shocked, oh my goodness, we never expected this, this totally took us by surprise. And I think anybody trying to pay attention in the last 5 years, that's pretty much all we've been hearing from scientists. So, you know, yeah, granted, wherever that satellite lands, you know, I hope it doesn't even hit, I hope it kind of it won't, but, you know. Yeah, I guess the ocean is.
No, she's a coming on down, and you got a 75% chance of it hitting water.
Yeah.
Or a 66% chance. What is it? 3/4, 2/3 of the Earth's covered by water. So.
Hey, you know, that's not bad though. And if that satellite's gone, well, that's one less tool the NSA has to spy on us. You know, I don't feel so.
Which
bad.
You know, which probably explains why the White House is so adamant that I got to listen for the fudge recipe, because we know we. Yeah, you know, Mark Levine was talking about that during his show, and it just drove me crazy, because Mark was, you know, Mark made a very, very strong point. Fellas, they're probably not going to use something that you can pick up.
Yeah.
They're going to use code, and, you know, the thing that occurred to me was, no, they're going to use Arabic. Because we fired our Arabic translators because the Bush administration decided it didn't like how the Arabic translators had sex.
Yeah, I know.
Help me.
I know. I mean, if you're going to be xenophobic against a particular race of people or religion, wouldn't you want, like, their outcasts on your side?
But it wasn't even their outcasts. These were people that we had paid money to train to become fluent Arabic speakers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
And we fired them under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Because it was more important to keep the homos out of Arabic language translation than it was to find out when or if they might want to bomb us. Go figure.
Well, that opens up a whole other can of, why do they keep handicapping themselves and then, you know, at the same time trying to be like, oh, well, we really care about this issue and that's why we're taking away your rights. You know, I mean, it brings up a whole other can that, you know, I think is really important for people to actually pay attention to. You know, why would they do all these things that don't make sense at the same time sucking away and stepping up these, you know, structures to totally siphon away our civil liberties?
I don't know if there's anybody out there with the mathematical skills to calculate this. I would really love it if there are. Well, I know there's one guy. We've got a rocket scientist in the audience, and He's an absolutely wonderful correspondent, and a rock solid supporter of the network. I don't know how you would calculate it, but how much kinetic energy would be released with this satellite the size of a school bus landing on a building like, say, the White House?
It would certainly do enough to render it unrecognizable, I guess you could say. I mean, it doesn't take a big rock. I mean, depending on the speed and everything, Yeah, I mean, let's say it's probably traveling around, what, 11?
But you can see God wherever it is that God is. And, you got to lead him a little bit, son.
You know, I'm still waiting for the thunderbolts to come down from God. God, you know, I look at God owing me some thunderbolts every time these, you know, giggling bastards sit up there and lie. And, you know, people, I was...
It's not like you're not calling in the coordinates.
Yeah, I think he should know that, no? I mean, I'll tell you, if it really hampers the NSA, the thing can land on my house. I need new sheetrock anyway, so, you know, I really can't stand where... I just can't, I don't know, I really, as I was saying earlier with the whole energy issue, we have a lot to pay attention to, and we have a lot of work ahead of us, and there's no way, shape, or form, whatever grassroots come up to, you know, get this election going or whatever, you know, there's no way that it can stop after the election. There's no way. I mean, like, remember when Bush was elected? Well, remember when he was selected the first time? And, I mean, people were throwing tomatoes at his vehicle.
And it never made it, and nobody ever knew about it? Sure.
Yeah. Actually, have you ever seen that video? That's a great video. It's out there.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. Oh, that's a wonderful thing. Yeah, that made me feel good to be an American because, you know, why not? Throw a tomato at the bat. Anyway. Yeah. If they sit there and really do, if we really do care, if these people aren't just, you know, as one person called, you know, just a liberal snuggle fest, which was the Daily Kos, you know, which is what probably, you know, sadly to say, I think even a large portion of us, we are so tired of Bush that if we do get a Democrat in there, and when we do get a Democrat in there, you know, we'll probably just go, oh, thank goodness, and let's go on vacation.
I made a promise, Albert. I made a promise before the 2006 elections, and I feel like I've done a pretty good job following through on it, that if we got, I said before the 2006 elections, that if we got Democrats in the majority in the Congress, I would be harder on them than I had ever been on the Republicans. Because I expect more of them, and I extend that vow to the presidency as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've been with you on that one. I've been here with you on that one, and I certainly haven't let them slide. And I'll tell you, I think you can even maybe acknowledge that they've done nothing. These guys have done absolutely.
Well, bless his heart, Mark Levine mentioned the minimum raise increase, and all I could think was, you know, don't spend that extra 50 cents on 50 cents an hour. All in one place there, you working stiff, you.
Yeah. I mean, bread is climbing up there. You know, two loaves of bread now, $5, and that's a bargain.
Two loaves of bread, $5. 2 gallons of milk, $8.
Eight, at least. And if you get the organic, it's 12. You know, and, I mean, it's not getting cheaper out here. You know, and that's one of these things. And, you know, these guys, they don't know. They, like, none of these people know. None of these, you know, I don't care, Democrat, Republican, Independent, Bernie Sanders might know because he lives in Vermont and, you know, he lives next to his constituents. But, you know, you're sitting here looking at it, it's not getting any cheaper out here. It's not getting any easier. And to sit here and make ends meet, I mean, I'm meeting more, even this man owns a body shop, beautiful body shop, and he's week to week. He owns a business and he's week to week. You know, and, I mean, this is the whole deal here. They'll give corporations. Now, I don't mind small corporations. You know, about you, if you're a corporation, I'm not talking about you, and I think everybody kind of maybe takes that for granted. You know, we talk about corporations, and I talk to guys that own corporations that are, you know, average people like you and me, and they get all, well, corporations, oh, they tax us too much. Yeah, but they're giving the rebates and the checks and all that to the wrong corporate, these massive multinational conglomerate, you know, these corporations with power.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing as farm appropriations.
Oh, yeah.
I'm all for farm appropriations for a guy who runs a farm, and they're family farmers, and they've been family farmers for 4, 5, 10 generations, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for helping that guy, because we're coming to a point in America where we can't feed ourselves because we've turned too many huge chunks of farmland into McMansions.
Mm-hmm.
But I am not in favor of providing corporate subsidies, corporate welfare, if you will, to Archer Daniels Midland and Monsanto. They don't need it.
Nope. Or they don't deserve it either. And it's a real sad state because I do live in farmlands. I mean, I do. I mean, we're seeing, I mean, they just built a whole new development out here and it's empty. And I'll tell you what, I think it's going to be empty for a very long time. My neighbor's trying to sell his house. I told him, I'm like, you're out of your mind. Like, you're not selling your house. You know, and I think in a way, I don't toot my own horn. I've been calling this for years. And this is not going to end very prettily. It's not going to be pretty. We're sitting here looking at the very beginnings of a big problem. You know, and, you know, what was that one guy? He's a real despicable, I'm not going to say it, but he's a real despicable bastard. He was on, if anybody's seen the movie, I don't know his name, but I know of him. And he was on Sicko, and he was the idiot, the pure idiot, talking about how Canada only had one chemo machine.
I'm no help there either.
Yeah, he's just that guy's one of those that, against the wall for me, but
and by the heels, you know, I know.
He wants to attack. Who does he want to attack now? He wants to attack North Korea. That's what he wants to do. He wants to destroy North Korea. Why? Because it would be good for the market. You see, and I think, you know, one thing I'm going to say, even though the guy's a despicable bastard, you got to say thank you. Thank you for at least being honest that the reason you chicken hawks support the wars and chicken hawks is so your stock portfolios raise and your hedge funds get bigger and everything else. And it's all personal greed. Now, I would like to say,
thank you for being who you are. Thank you for confirming the fact of what we have said all along, that you're in, you know, we're in it for the money.
In the money, yeah. Exactly. And how much more, how much longer can we sit here and ignore these people and their obvious coming out and saying, hey, look at us. We love war. We love destruction. We're not going to do it, but because it makes our lives better.
You know, what's important, though, Albert, is for us to point at those people and say, there he is. Look at him. We told you. They're proving it. Now stop with the business about that it's a conspiracy and we're moon bats for saying that we're in a war for oil or a war for profit. There's your proof.
Yeah.
Because the real kick. Well, the real kick is to make sure that people understand that is the reality.
It is. It really is. You know, and in the last 8 years, we've been hearing a lot. Not only have we been moonbats and whatever, it's just nothing but, you know, we're screeching liberals. And, you know, this is to everybody. We're screeching liberals, all we do is we say, we bitch and whine and moan, that, you know, we always complain and la, 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 but you never offer any suggestions for how to make things better. Well, you know, honestly, seriously, and maybe I'm just saying this being naive or whatever, call me whatever you want, but I believe now that once we get a Democrat in office, we're going to have an ear that somebody's at least going to look at what we're writing or look at what we're saying, hopefully. And I think if we can manage this, I think everybody, I think besides being frustrated and just outraged over these past 8 years, and sometimes that outrage blinds us to, you know, to actually making a difference or thinking of anything suggested because we're so outraged that all this stuff is happening, and then you feel like people aren't even paying attention. And I understand that feeling. Trust me. You can hear it. I'm a lunatic. So I think from now on, like, you know, every time we do come up with one of those ideas, and I'm sure you've done it and everybody's done it, is write it down. What's something that we can do? You know, I'd like to see a law that, you know, prohibits, you know, like, that actually makes it an act of treason to go into a war for profit. I mean, a literal act of treason. Something that is so blanket that if you do a war like this, and it is over resources, like anybody who starts another war goes in, and the first thing they do is secure the oil fields, leave the museums alone, the water infrastructure, I mean, you know, all that stuff can go to hell. And anybody ever does anything like this again, that's an act of treason. Why? Because look at what Bush has done. Look at this war. I mean, the war in Iraq, I mean, it's an albatross across this country's neck. And I don't know if it's ever going to get off. You know, that's my fear, is I don't know if this albatross of Iraq is ever going to get off our neck. And this is an act of supreme treason. Come on, Bob. If somebody's going to say, you know what, Bob, like it or not, I'm going to kill you. Okay? But you have a choice. You can go fast or you can go slow. Where would you rather go? Come on. Everybody would rather go fast. Just get it over with. Do it. Don't do this long, slow, parasitic, long descent into hell, which is where I feel that we're going. And it's sad. It doesn't mean it's irreversible, but that's where we're at.
It's the difference between Wile E. Coyote getting an anvil dropped on him or Wile E. Coyote having to ride the rocket skates before he finally flies into the wall.
Oh, Bob, you always got the perfect picture, don't you?
I grew up on Warner Brothers cartoons, and it always looked to me like it was a lot easier on the coyote when he just got the rock on his head.
Yeah. Just, uh-oh, boom.
Yeah, or, I don't know, the bus-sized satellite from the sky. I swear that thing's going to come down, and wherever it does land, we're going to find a big chunk of it, and it's going to have Acme Incorporated written on the side.
Well, hey, you know, it probably has something made in India or made in China or something like that on there as well, you know, because that's another way. You know,
where do you think Acme outsourced all its work to? They're not building the rocket skates in America anymore.
Well, do you remember when the right wing was all freaking out and when Bill Clinton did this? I mean, it was wrong, certainly. But when
Loral Incorporated gave missile technologies to the Chinese. Bill Clinton and his intimate relation with the Chi-Coms. Oh, I remember it well.
Yeah. Oh, everybody. Yeah. I think it's hard. It's 8 years ago in this country. That's, you know, that's centuries or at least a millennia.
Never mind the fact that George Bush just sent all kinds of that stuff over and, you know, hear the crickets?
Exactly. Well, we need to be able to maintain our military to be competitive. So we're going to have them make it for us. As I said, I don't feel like I'm from this planet, and I don't feel like I'm part of this species anymore. I don't understand it. It just is. I don't understand it. I don't know how else to say it. It's incomprehensible. It's just unbelievable. How are you going to try to say that you like a strong military, and then you're going to have, I'm not trying to say that, but a potential enemy, right, if you're going to look at it, the world like that, and there's a lot of, you know, troglodytes do look at the world like that, like if you're not American, you're an enemy, or even Canada, oh, you better watch it, Canada, we'll come and get you, there's Ann Coulter and her.
Oh, there's a story out there, Albert, and maybe I'll get to it.
Card.
There's a story out there about a guy who wrote a blog post about the fact that Canada had placed the United States on its torture list.
Ah.
And he got a visit from the FBI for his troubles.
Oh, my God.
Got an involuntary trip down. He said, I didn't even know the FBI was in town, but they've got an office, and I got grilled for 6 hours. They asked all the questions. I gave all the answers.
Mm.
Welcome to the national security state. Hey, Albert, I got a roll, brother.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you later.
All right, sounds good. Bye now.
All right, thanks. Bye.
And let's see if, hopefully you're not a... you are. You're a busy signal now. Sorry about that. You want to get in on this conversation? It's a dandy. And I'm glad that Albert's on the same side with what I hope will be the rest of us. Put a Democrat in the White House and then wear that Democrat out. Don't let them take a breath without absolutely hammering them. For what we want. Nancy Pelosi thought it was icky to have peace and impeachment protesters in front of her house. Put 10 times as many there. Put thousands of people around the White House. Make Democrats behave like Democrats. Force Democrats to behave in the way that we expect America to behave. Can you do that? Can we do that? It certainly remains to be seen. Now, just in case you were wondering, Florida got really nasty before the primary started, down to the point where where Willard Romney and John McCain got down to the ugliest possible thing they could say about each other. And what is that? why Willard Romney and John McCain called each other liberals. With just hours before the Florida Republican primary vote and the polls indicating a dead heat, Willard Romney and John McCain have abandoned all civilized restraints and committed the ultimate offense. Each has accused the other of being a liberal.
You're a liberal.
No, you're a liberal. You'd hire a million illegal aliens.
Well, you'd hire a gazillion.
Eugene Finnerman is waiting to see which one is first accused of being a boogerhead. Apparently none of the striking script writers are Republicans, otherwise we might get a better quality of accusation. You're so liberal, you'd have voted for Lincoln. You're so liberal, you've married him. You're so liberal, you'd have killed Jesus. You're so liberal, you'd force the Virgin Mary to get an abortion. You're so liberal, you want to lose the Iraq War. You're so liberal, you'd want to win the Second World War. That's where we are. It's where we live. By the way, did you notice last night in the so-called State of the Union address that George Bush said, "Tonight the armies of compassion continue the march to a new day in the Gulf Coast. America honors the strength and resilience of people in this region. We reaffirm our pledge to help them build a stronger and better than before, and tonight I'm pleased to announce that in April we will host this year's North American Summit of Canada, Mexico, and the United States in the great city of New Orleans." Did you hear that? I heard that. And bless her little heart, Loney, Liza. I call her Loney. That was my great-grandmother's nickname. Was asleep. And I got in trouble because I went, "Don't!" And, you know, woke up and crying. Bob, if you can't behave while watching the jug-eared loudspeak, you'll have to leave the room. Of course, in the 2007 State of the Union address, not a word was said about New Orleans or the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Almost 40% of the people displaced from New Orleans by Hurricane Katrina lived below the poverty line last year. That's not from some liberal think tank. That's from the Census Bureau. Nearly a third of those who fled the hurricane could not find jobs last year either. Thousands more had become discouraged workers and given up trying as well. Next Monday, one of the few television shows that I watch is No Reservations with Anthony Bourdain. And next Monday will be a return to New Orleans. And if the promos are any indication, it might be worth watching because Tony Bourdain has a sharp wit and a sharper tongue, and he's made lots of sport over Emeril Lagasse over the years. But he sits down and has a conversation with Emeril about New Orleans and what it means, and just the promo was enough to make me want to make sure that I see it. The armies of compassion continue the march. Well, yeah, okay, George, the armies of compassion do continue the march. It's just that the armies of compassion haven't freaking got there yet, I guess. In April, we'll hold this year's North American Summit of Canada, Mexico, and the United States in the great city of New Orleans. So, thanks, George. We know how much it costs when you and your globalist buddies, your free trade pals, get together and have a summit. We saw that in, Sydney, Australia, for instance. So now, a city that is absolutely staggering still, where most of the city still hasn't been rebuilt, where low-income housing is going to be demolished to create little condo colonies, is going to have the added bonus of having to put up with your stinking security detail. and all the security hoopla that goes with it, and all the professional electronic media that will descend upon that poor, stumbling, staggering, aching place. I don't care how many tops they serve in how many restaurants in New Orleans or how many hotel rooms get filled up. It's not going to balance off against what it costs the people and the government and the infrastructure for you to take your miserable hide there. You want to help New Orleans? You want to help the Gulf Coast? Take the money that you would spend there and just ship it to them. And stay the hell away. Stay out. We reaffirm our pledge to help them build stronger and better than before. That's code. That's right-wing code. We reaffirm our pledge to rebuild New Orleans as a lily-white city. A city that a Republican can be proud to visit. Except for the fact that we'll still leave the hookers and the madams who dress up Republican right-wing family values Senator David Vitter in diapers and kick him around a little bit. No, it was a tough watch. It was a really, really tough watch. And of course, yeah, the permanent bases have been signing statemented. You heard that in my conversation with Albert. Meanwhile, back on the front of, well, serious stuff, the FISA bill. The FISA bill. Remember the FISA bill? Remember telecom immunity? Made a phone call early yesterday morning. Just picked up the phone and dialed my senator, the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman, Jay Rockefeller. I dialed his office. I told him my name. They went click-click on the computer and confirmed my address, which I guess they do. And I said, listen, I'm a Democrat. I vote. And I consider Senator Rockefeller's support for giving telecoms immunity for spying on me and fellow Americans unforgivable. And I won't let it pass, and I won't forget about it. And if he does that, I will encourage everybody I know to leave his name blank in the election. Interesting little piece of audio here from Senator Rockefeller during yesterday's debate. Have a listen.
The president wants the FISA bill passed by the Senate, but he has sent the decree down to the Republican leadership that they are to prevent its prompt passage. Well, prompt passage we have to have. The president does not want the current six-month Protect America Act to expire this Friday. He does not want that to happen. But he has stated he will veto any extension and thereby ensure that it will expire. What more evidence is needed to demonstrate the irrational and self-destructive political addiction that drives this White House? It doesn't drive the vice chairman of the Intelligence Senate, can be a guarantee of that. Under the tortured logic of protecting America against terrorism, the White House has decided to exercise, frankly, its own form of political terrorism and has taken the FISA bill hostage.
That last part there was actually kind of starchy. He called the White House terrorists. For the first time, on the floor of the United States Senate, the truth has finally been told about the Bush administration. They are terrorists. And they are exercising electronic terrorism over the people of the United States via the domestic spying program. It's really that simple. This is not one of those with a lot of nuance to it. There's not a lot of gray area. When you are willing to spy willy-nilly on the people of the United States without even so much as a warrant or a by your leave from a member of the FISA court, you are exercising a degree of terrorism on the people of the United States. And Jay Rockefeller called him on it. I don't know if Jay Rockefeller has changed his tune about granting telecom immunity. I don't think he would do so on one miserable little phone call from one miserable little constituent. But maybe there have been more calls. Maybe there have been a lot more calls. Maybe there's been some of that armchair activism that Heather mentioned at the beginning of this program. Dare I hope? Dare I indulge myself in a moment of unbridled optimism or idealism? I'm inclined to do so. It was tepid at best, what the Senate did, but it was something. It was a little bit of fight back. And for that, I am somewhat grateful. And I hope that we'll see more. The PAA of the FISA, MOUSE, the Protect America Act expires on Friday, and for my money, it can stay expired. Because the FISA law was perfectly adequate. If the government wanted to spy on a phone call, it could go ahead and spy. All it had to do was give notice 72 hours within, 72 hours after the fact, to the FISA court and get the spy job rubber stamped. But that's not good enough for the Bush administration. The Bush administration wants to spy willy-nilly, and the problem lies in the fact that the people they want to spy on wholesale, i.e. every blessed telephone number, email account, and ISP IP number in this country cannot possibly pass even the minimalist muster of the FISA court. So they just want Congress to write the blank check. Actually, it's not a blank check. It's a blank warrant. Round up the usual suspects. You know how the drill works. And the question that continues to obtain, that persists, is whether the Democratic-controlled United States Senate will give George Bush the power to slit the throat of the Fourth Amendment once and for all. And it's up to you. It's a question of how much political pressure you can bring to bear on your member of the United States Senate and other members. About 17 minutes before the hour, and we go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke.
Well, I was going to tell you I was going to call up to represent my client, Mr. Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
I know.
I was just amazed a little while ago. I was watching the evening news. I got it just as it was going off. So ABC's saying they wanted to show the snub, as they call it, from last night. And they were showing the thing, you know, with Hillary going over and shaking Kennedy's hand and Obama turning his head, looking the other direction. And I was sitting there listening to it, and they got talking, and it's like they did a little thing where they talked to him today, you know, and had their statement. And there's, I can't believe it, Charlie Gibson. We can't call it a snub because I say he probably may not have seen her. And I'm sitting there going, use the left foot argument. Now, let's say she she'd been standing there talking to somebody and Obama had come over and she turned her head, what would you have said? I'm just amazed at what's in the national media. And, you know, like I say, I'm voting for Edwards, so I have no real dog in this fight. But it's just amazing to me to just to see the way the media is all lining up behind Obama. Now, you know what I mean? That's okay. That's their choice. But, I mean, it's just sort of like, oh, no, we're not doing anything. But, of course, we know he didn't do anything wrong.
The thing that kind of got under my skin, though, Luke, was the fact that we talked about it at all.
I know. Well, there's
George Bush giving the last miserable attempt of his many miserable attempts at a State of the Union address, and it was miserable from start to finish, and it was particularly insulting in two or three individual areas.
Oh, yeah.
And in order to avoid talking about that, the professional media were forced to try to turn this into a personality conflict once again and shift the focus, because ultimately that was what it was about, was shifting the focus away from the disaster, the walking, talking, breathing, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing disaster that George W. Bush is.
As we say, the black hole that travels with him, you know how it is.
And so we get all this discussion of Snubgate, I guess. Is that what it's being called, Snubgate?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they decided to call it, but you know what I mean? It's just amazing. The thing that gets to me, and like I say, I have no dog in this fight, is amazing to me to sit and watch all the conservative media who are all of a sudden, or not even all of a sudden, are all, we love Obama. You know what I mean? If you go out there and sample around, you know, what the media on the right wing is, all the right wing are all behind Obama.
I think it's a bit of a psyops, Luke.
Well, I'm wondering about that. You know what I mean? But it's one of those things. I'm sitting there going, did you read Krugman's column today?
Yeah.
The thing that gets you is they're sitting there going, the Obama people are like, oh, yeah, we're going to just say everything's great. We're going to make friends. And, of course, the Republicans will just go, oh, yeah, sure. You know, let's all start singing, you know.
Well, if it's a psyops, here's how it works. The mainstream media saw how Chris Matthews whooping up on Hillary Clinton worked to her benefit in New Hampshire. And now, with the possibility of Obama overtaking her, they're going to do the whole thing where they love Obama in hopes of turning the electorate against him, because it's, I don't know, call it the Tweety factor.
Well,
do you understand, does that make any sense at all?
Well, yeah,
because
yeah.
It about halfway doesn't coming out of my mouth.
Well I'm just wondering though. I'm sitting here and I've got MSNBC on because they're doing their coverage tonight, you know, of the primary down in Florida.
Any early returns in yet?
Oh yeah they've got about 10% in. They're already starting to run numbers. Right now, you want me to give it to you here?
Yeah, please.
Well, like I said, on the Republican side, McCain's got 34%. This is like with 10% in. McCain's got 34%. Mitt Romney's got 31%. And Rudy's got 18%.
Okay, so we can start doing the dee-do, dee-do, dee-do for Rudy, right? It's over.
Yeah. Well, at least now probably maybe the state attorney general in New York can start saying, you know, Mr. Carrick, you can roll over. We'll take, if you want to talk about Rudy now, we'll listen. You know? Because they probably weren't going to while he was running for office.
Probably true.
Well, and now on the Democratic side, about the same numbers in, you know what I mean, same percent of land we're in right now. Hillary's got 52%. Obama's got right at 30%. And it hadn't come back up again, so this is what I remember from a couple of minutes ago.
I'm trying to figure out whether Florida actually matters, Luke, because
well,
the Democratic.
Well, like I say, when you still look at the numbers, you know what I mean. Even
sure.
Though these aren't delegates, you know what I mean. You have to say, well, okay, now how are these people then? If this is a breakdown, you know what I mean. How is Florida? Essentially, this is a poll. You know what I mean. It's a very accurate poll because you've had to vote. But you know what I mean. For Democrats, this is a poll. And like I say, Hillary had 50, the last time it came up, they just went to commercial. The last cycle I saw had Hillary 52%, Obama with 30 to 31%, and Edwards with 19%. And I said that was probably with like 8 or 9% of the vote in. So it can still change. They still got like 10 more minutes before the panhandle closes.
Oh, yeah, because the panhandle's in central time.
Yeah. But this is what they had, I guess, from the south part. I haven't had the sound on because I didn't want to listen to Tweety. We're talking about Tweety. Have you sat down and read that, and I'll use this word loosely, apology he made?
Yes, yes.
In it, he does not apologize. He apologizes for the fact that people took his words wrong.
It's the non-apology.
He was wrong.
It's the non-apology apology.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you felt insulted.
Yeah.
Not I'm sorry I insulted you.
Or I'm sorry you misunderstood what I was saying, even though you didn't. You know.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're an idiot.
Well, I said, I still think the one that tells you the most is, well, I think we talked about this last week, was the thing he got in over trouble over was the thing talking about Hillary only being there because Bill had fooled around. And it just always remember that was what he said the next morning on Morning Joe after the night before Tom Brokaw had read him the Riot Act on camera. You know, as he said, you stepped over the line.
Well, he did it again with the thing on camera with McCain last night after the State of the Union.
If they'd been in the same room, he'd probably gone over and sat in his lap.
If they'd been in the same room, we would have had to have a parental warning notification because there would have been clothes coming off.
Yeah, I mean, if I say...
Wait a minute, Luke. Okay. This is kind of fun. Let's not talk about it. Let's share it.
Oh, okay.
I think I've actually got it queued up here. Yeah, here we go. Tweety Matthews and McCain... And I don't know if we could if I was a little bit better prepared, I'd play the theme from A Summer Place underneath this. Honest to God, I would, Luke.
Right now, let's go to Senator John McCain, Republican presidential. There he is, Senator McCain. You know you're in my heart. I have to tell.
What? You're in my heart. Is this where I have to cue up Rod Stewart?
The president gave you.
What was that?
I was going to say, has anybody called, Out Magazine? Have they got this story? I'm curious.
I know. Let's give Tweety another chance.
You know you're in my heart. I have to tell you, the president gave your speech tonight. He talked about we got to cut the number of earmarks in half or I'm going to veto the bill. He talked about the war against terrorism. He talked about reform. He didn't talk much about the global economic challenge right now. In fact, he said, you basically, we'll get through this like you do. It was your speech, Senator.
Well, I would have, I liked the speech and...
Dear God, he turned into Ronald Reagan before our very eyes.
Nancy.
Oh God, is this what I'm saying? Yeah, is the director here? Do I have to do it? Where's my line?
Ketchup is a vegetable.
No, I'm sorry, that's Bush. See, they all run together for me after a while. Lord.
But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. If I say, you know, if they told. Carville and Bogato, they can't be on because they're friends with the Clintons. I think we ought to ask MSNBC, can Chris Matthews stay on? Since he essentially is already, apparently, I don't know what it is, what you say, was it? He laid down his life or already said he'll represent McCain.
But it's NBC.
I know. You know what I mean? It's okay to say you like somebody. That's fine. You know what I mean? You may know them on a personal level. You know what I mean? Say howdy to them. You're all there at the same time. That's fine. But dear God, is there some director? Every time I look at him, I keep looking to see if I can see the earwig. Because 10 to 1, it should be going red. Because probably there's a director there screaming, or should be.
You're in my heart.
Well, the thing we were talking about a minute ago, though. You know, you were talking about the thought thing. Just remember now, if Barack is the choice, and if he is, when it comes to the time, I'll vote for him. But like you and I know, and like Dave over in Nashville knows, we saw what happened to Harold Ford, and we'll see that exact same playbook.
Sure, because honest to God, it was either the McCain camp or the Romney camp that hired the guy that did the Harold Ford Jungle Drums ad.
And like I say, it won't be anything overt. I mean, it'll be nice and subtle. They'll never say one word directly at it. But you watch, they'll have everything imaginable. You know what I mean? They'll they'll play every visual cue or something they could. You know, it's like, God.
Barack, call me. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And it is going to be ugly. And I've got an email here from our buddy David in South Carolina, David. And he points out that the story about the 935 Bush administration lies ran for one day in the paper there in South Carolina. However, the stories portraying the Clintons as racists played at least a week, and they are still playing. He says the difference in the outcome had more to do with the campaigns on the ground than any of this crap on TV. One talking head on MSNBC noted that Edwards was expected to win in all the conservative precincts, while not noting that Edwards was the most liberal of the three candidates. Edwards did not have enough walking money. As a veteran of South Carolina Democratic campaigns, David says, I know that walking money is critical for success. Obama's campaign was talking about telling his supporters to stay home in the fall should he not make the top slot on the ticket. David says, I don't know if the threat is real or not, but I'm sure it will be taken seriously.
You know, it's one of those things that I say, look, gang, whoever we come up with out of this, I'm going to vote for. I mean, you know, it's like, say, I'm at the point right now, if they put up Mike Gravel, I would vote for Mike Gravel. You know what I mean? Because, as we've said, the worst Democrat is 10 times better than the best Republican. You know. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, whoever comes out of this on top, I'll vote for it. But, you know, it is the old theory, quit burning the bridge when you're standing, you know, quit trying to burn both ends of the bridge when you're standing in the middle. This does not have a happy ending.
No.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the kind of ending you expect in a Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Yeah.
To return to, yeah. So,
I really should get a poster of him. I tell you what, I always remember the. Do you remember the thing in Babylon 5 with Daffy Duck?
No.
Well, in Babylon 5, the character of Garibaldi was like cartoons, and up on his wall he had a big picture of Daffy Duck. And one of the aliens walked in time and said, "Is that one of his household gods?" And he looked at it and was talking to the doctor. And the doctor looked at it and said, "Yes, that's the god of frustration."
Ain't that the truth? I may be a greedy coward. I may be a coward, but I'm a greedy coward. Although my personal favorite is it's a living. When he's been turned into the hands of the
clock of the giant.
Yeah, right.
I still think it's amazing when you have to tell people who's the. Well, I think there's only two times you ever saw the Tasmanian devil beaten up, and one of them was by Daffy Duck.
I know. Well, you know, Chuck Jones always said that Daffy was his favorite.
Tell you, so that's just so much fun. But it's like saying, you know, like I said, we'll know. Like I say, next week after we have Super Tuesday, you know, things will straighten out. You know, I mean, it's like I say, the thing that they haven't got to it yet, but I'm sure that tonight we're going to go through here, and I'm sure they'll be pronouncing who's dead, either Huckabee or mine's going blank on me. I apologize. Huckabee and Giuliani, it's like, who'll be the first one to get out?
It's got to be Giuliani, though, if he tanks in Florida.
Because everything's down there.
Well, it's getting a little bit desperate. I've got a story here about Huckabee criticizing Romney for how he eats fried chicken. That's how fluffy, that's how meaningless, that's how unpolluted by actual issues the Republican campaign has become.
Well, you're talking about McCain and Romney calling each other liberal. You got to wonder what's going to happen when somewhere down the line some of the columnists are going to start saying things about one or the other. You know, and they're going to say, "Oh, look, Paul Krugman likes him. That shows he's a liberal." You know,
if Paul are you now, or ever have you been, ever to a cocktail party with a liberal?
Well, I'm surprised that Romney hasn't started running ads showing every picture he can find of McCain standing there with our boy Joe.
You know, I think Joe Lieberman's off limits because he's on the short list of vice presidential nominees of every blessed Republican candidate. I swear, I promise he is.
I know, but... It's just one of those things. It's like, say, you know, and we were talking about Sops. It's kind of the reverse thing with them. is amazing when you sit back and you look at all the Beltway Republicans who are all lining up behind Romney. You know, all the talk show hosts, all the things, you know, that all of them want Romney because most of them don't like McCain.
Exactly. Hey, Luke, I got to run along.
They are, I know.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye. The snub. In the middle of an absolute disaster of a State of the Union speech, the professional media gives us the snub. I hate them so much. I just do. I can't help it anymore. The professional media. You know, kiss my butt. Oops, lost the caller again. There's the photograph in all its glory. Barack Obama clearly reaching around to greet someone to the back of Senator Kennedy, not even turning his back fully on Hillary Clinton, and somehow it turns into the snub. I guess we just have to put up with it. Because there's no way with a nation of this size to get people to turn off the TVs until these people learn how to behave like responsible journalists. I guess it's just impossible. Or is it? I guess that's the $64 million question. Let's try the phones again. Hi, who have I got?
It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
I'm all right. I sincerely hope the way Hillary and Barack are fighting tooth and nail, whoever wins this will fight tooth and nail against their Republican opponent and don't do a John Kerry or Al Gore.
Best thing said all night, Kevin. If you'll fight that hard against a Republican, we'll be okay.
I really do, because, you know, it's angering me. You know, and they're both playing into the Republican opponent's hand, because whoever wins our primary is going to be so bloodied. It kind of reminds me of that episode of James Bond, The Chinese Fighting Fish.
Hmm.
You remember that one?
I do.
From Russia with Love. Then you have that smart one who waits until everybody fights each other, then he goes to the easy kill.
And that's typical Republican behavior.
Yeah.
And moreover, Kevin, you say the two candidates and refer to them as being bloodied. It's not them who are going to be bloodied so much as the people who are such diehard partisans of them. At this point in time, if you wander around Democratic websites, Hillary people despise Obama people. And Obama people pretty much despise the Hillary people.
Yeah.
So that I wind up talking two nights in a row about the desperate necessity of supporting the Democratic nominee. I shouldn't even have to say that, Kevin. It should go without saying, literally. It should be a no-brainer. But you got people talking about sitting out the election and helping to create potentially a McCain or a Romney or a Huckabee or a Giuliani or even a Paul presidency. And that should, I won't say it's shocking, but it is disgusting.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I honestly think McCain is going to get it. And basically, they're giving him his just due for the beating he took in South Carolina 8 years ago. You know, they're throwing him a bone.
In other words, this is his payback for loyalty to the family? Sounds like something out of a Godfather movie.
Well, hey.
You've been loyal. Wait. Now you get to go to Washington.
Yeah, well,
or the White House or whatever.
The thing is, if the Democrats had their stuff together, this would be the like a repeat of 96 with Bob Dole. Let the old Keister run and lose.
Yeah, I'd almost forgotten he was the Republican nominee at one point.
Yeah, you know, and don't forget, McCain and Bob Dole are, I think, the same age.
I thought Dole was a little bit older.
Well, no, Bob Dole was in his 70s. That's... in his early 70s, like McCain.
No, he can't. No, he can't be. He's got to. He's got to be in his 80s because he fought in the Second World War.
Yeah, but that's 10 years ago.
Oh, you mean? Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. When they ran. When they ran. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be let the old fogey run and lose. But the thing is, if Democrats can't win this election, then you know what? I don't know what to do.
We're done.
I'm so done. It's not funny. Because this is no reason why we shouldn't be. You know. There's no reason why we should not win this election. There's no reason why we should not have won the last two elections.
We kind of did.
Yeah, well, you know. It's,
I get what you're saying, but we kind of did.
Yeah, it's a, you know, and like I said, I'm pretty sure the Skull and Bones people tapped Kerry and said, kind of reminded him of the fable they did for him back in the 60s. And that's why he caved.
You think?
Oh yeah. You
know, I did see proof today that there is a nexus between the Kennedy endorsement of Obama and the John Kerry people, because I got one of those little junk emails that sometimes prove useful, but most of the time prove not, where Ted Kennedy says, yesterday I endorsed Barack Obama, and today I want to introduce you to some of my friends from the Friends of Kerry. Oh, really?
Oh, you know, that's all Massachusetts politics. But also on the Republican end, I just want to say, don't underestimate Romney, even though I think he's not going to get it. Because if he was governor of Massachusetts, he must be doing something right.
Lord, I hope that's not the benchmark standard.
Well, hey, he was a Republican governor of Massachusetts. Need I say any more?
Probably not.
Yeah. You know, but I really think it's going to be McCain who has it. You know, they're giving it to him. He's literally though, and the thing is, the Republicans are setting this up so greatly because, come on, you have to give McCain is a figure that even he commands the most respect out of all the Republicans.
As the elder statesman, I think you're right. Romney's just creepy. Huckabee's insane. Well, they're all insane.
Yeah, but out of all of them,
it kind of defaults to McCain.
Yeah, you know, he is the most famous of the bunch, and this is the guy who survived the Hanoi Hilton.
And we will be. It's interesting you should raise that, because we will. If it is McCain as the nominee, please understand, Kevin, and you already do.
We'll be in Iraq for 100 years.
Not just that, but we will be beaten over the head with John McCain, Vietnam War hero.
Hanoi Hilton.
For months.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, we're decent people, and we would never do something as sleazy as to show up at a political convention with little Purple Heart Band-Aids on our faces. Okay. And we won't put together, what, Phantom 4 pilots for truth to talk about how McCain napalmed native villages of no military significance and burned up little women and children from 40,000 feet. We won't do that.
Because we respect the military, unlike the Republicans.
We also won't talk about the fact that John McCain sang like a canary in a coal mine when he was tortured. And gave up all kinds of information, you know, whatever information he had, he gave up. We won't do that. Because, again, we're above that.
Yep.
On the other hand, it will be easy to see, if it's McCain as the nominee, Kevin, it will be easy to see the difference between Republicans and Democrats. Because had the shoes been on the other feet, and John Kerry was running as a Republican, Democrats wouldn't have swift-voted him either.
Oh, no.
What becomes critical is the inquiry as to whether or not that inures to our benefit. Do the American people enjoy politics as blood sport? Do they enjoy politics as Saturday night at the Armory wrestling? Or do they really want us to let a man's life or woman's life speak for itself and their ability to get the job done be judged on its face as opposed to the filth that the right wing puts out there?
I have very low faith in the American people, who are the most gullible people on the face of the planet. And I've seen that when I ventured out west. Yeah, they still believe that they're, you know, again, I go back to that dangerously naivety, and I do my Lord of the Rings reference regarding hobbits. Dangerously naive.
How so?
Because they truly believe out there. When you go to the Holland, and I guess I can include not you, but your average, typical working class, Jiffy Lube, white male, they truly believe that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iran.
Even now?
Yeah. Even after all.
I mean, I know Huckabee came out last week and said that the weapons of mass destruction are in Jordan now. It's sort of a grand game of where's Waldo, where the Republicans are concerned, to say, because remember when we didn't find them in Iran, they're all in Syria. Well, now they've apparently migrated from Syria to Jordan, according to Huckabee.
Well, yeah, they even believe it now. And they truly believe that the Democrats are going to wreck the economy if they win. In spite of 7 years and our dollar is worth half of what it is 7 years ago.
That's a grim assessment, Kevin.
Well, it is what it is, my friend. It really is. And what next has happened before you believe, you know, the Republicans have wrecked this country beyond, you know, to the point where it's like, whoever gets into the White House, you know, they're going to be screwed.
I really want you to be wrong. And I'm pretty sure that you want to be wrong, too.
I do, but I have no faith in the American, because I tell you, come November, first Tuesday in November, you know what people are going to vote? Especially if Barack Obama wins the primary, they're going to vote their skin color, and they're going to vote their bigotry, and they're going to vote. It's going to come out. Everything that's wrong with this country, that's what's going to reflect. And I'm telling you, if he gets the nomination, black people are going to find out where they really stand in this country. In spite of the billionaires that we've produced in the past 20 years, the Oprahs and all this, they're going to find out where they really stand in this country.
That's even grimmer. Lord, I've said things.
I'm a realist, man. I'm
yeah, you are, but.
I'm sorry to throw down the wet blanket, you know, but it is what it is. Again, I am proud of the fact that, you know, being African-American, I'm proud of the fact that Barack Obama is seriously a contender for the presidency. Don't get me wrong, but I'm also a realist.
That's a realism that says sad, sad things about this country.
You know, and, you know, 200 and some odd years of tradition doesn't go away that easily. It doesn't.
No. But it tells me that we're still fighting the Civil War.
We are still fighting the Civil War. The Solid South, Republican Solid South. Why did the South become Republican?
Because of civil rights.
And there's no getting around it, you know?
No, I guess there's not. But
no,
it's
respecting Southern or within that culture, you know, no so-called, and this is what they will say, will vote for Democrats. They won't.
You don't. I don't have any. But, well, I don't have a problem voting for Obama. I don't know any Democrats.
Well, you're the exception. You know, you.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't know anybody who. I don't know anybody who calls this program or listens to this program who would have a problem that with voting for Obama that was based on race.
Well, see, the people who listen to this program are enlightened people. But I'm talking about your knuckle-dragging, you know, knuckle-dragging right wing. You know, if you get it's the biggest expanding industry in this country right now, besides the defense.
You still there, Kevin? Oh, dear. That is a very, very grim assessment. And I'm not gooning on Kevin for making it, because it is, as he knows, it is realistic. And I don't think America is as wholly racist as perhaps Kevin does, but Kevin's got a lot better perspective on it than I do. But what I do think, and I think we got Kevin back here. Let me see what's happening here. You there, Kevin?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I lost the call.
That's okay.
Where
I was going though is that America doesn't have to be wholly as hatefully racist as what you just described, but all it in elections that are decided by 51 to 48, 51 to 49, that kind of thing, percentage points, America doesn't have to be entirely racist. You just need to get the racists out.
Well, the thing is, what is the largest industry besides the military-industrial complex? The largest growing industry that's employing non-college-educated white males?
Walmart?
No. Law enforcement.
Oh.
That promotes enough racism, bigotry right there. So, you know, they talk about, you know, well, why are some of these states voting against their interests? Because one of the biggest employers in many rural states is law enforcement, prisons and policemen. And who are they locking up or warehousing? People of color. You know, it is a self-generating economy, because you have people who aren't educated and they're not getting any social benefits or anything. There's no industry there, and what is there to do?
Not a lot.
You know, and you know, it's like yes, there are exceptions. Yes, you know, there are exceptions, but the reality is our prisons are, I would say, 70% filled with people of color. And that's just the bottom line, and that's an industry unto itself. And I see it every day in our schools, you know, and that's part of the reason why, you know, I became a teacher, is because, you know, I'm trying to prevent one less child child of color from going into prison.
If you can do that, your life will have been worthwhile.
Yeah.
If that, I mean, that's got to matter.
Yeah. But it is the self-generating economy of the future. What, you know, why? And that's the largest expansion of the white working class, law enforcement. Look at upstate New York. Look at Pennsylvania. And these are northern, so-called wealthy northern states. Look at California, the wealthiest economy, the seventh largest economy on the planet, California, if it was its own country.
I know. That really, really does sort of. I don't like it when I'm confronted with. I mean, how can I say this? I don't like it when I'm confronted with the facts of where this country stands.
Yeah.
But I think what you're describing is where this country stands.
Yeah. You see, you gotta understand, people like myself. And I don't mean to sound like a snob, but we are the exception to the so-called rules that have been planted out for us.
I understand. I don't know. I got a feeling this call is going to bother me for about the next night until I go on the air tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not. Please understand. I'm not. You know.
Yeah. Well, welcome to my world, Bob. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to, you know, throw the ice bucket of water on top of you, but this is the reality, and I think 2008 is going to be a monumental year for America, and as far as a lot of things, because, you know, we're talking about probably the most evil tyrant to ever rule this country in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And he has stirred up so much division and hatred and just the lowest common denominator for this country that, you know, some hardcore realities have to be faced.
Yeah, they do. Kevin, I'm going to roll on. Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry to rain on your parade.
No. You're not raining on my parade. You've redoubled my conviction. Because if I don't vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is, be it Obama, be it Edwards, or be it Clinton, we know we get insane McCain or Romney, most likely, possibly Huckabee.
Yeah.
We know what happens to this country if that happens.
And you know, just one last thing. The candidate with the most solid credentials as far as interest that most Americans like is Edwards, who's still running. Well, really, Kucinich. But Edwards, who can really probably do something and fix this country. And it's not about the flash in the media and all that. And I'm talking legitimately fix this country is Edwards. And he is like a soul in the vast ocean.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I do.
It's like the biggest front line is when Kucinich decided to drop out of the race. That's when he finally made front line news. The two candidates who legitimately had issues that can fix this country, heal this country. It's like the media just, like, totally ignored them.
Kevin, have yourself a good night, my friend.
Okay, I'm sorry, Bob.
No. Don't apologize. I think the reality that you've just spoken is a reality that needs to be absorbed especially by the people who are so polarized by their particular candidates. Somebody's going to win this thing, and whoever wins it is going to be better than whoever the Republicans put forward. Period.
Anyway.
And it becomes absolutely necessary that if the nominee is Obama, that everybody put their feelings aside and go and support Obama. Because we are going to be in an uphill, to a certain extent, in an uphill struggle against segregationists, racists, old line Southerners, Confederates, states' writers, and the entire operation, the entire juggernaut that is the Republican Party. And they will, you're absolutely right, they will leverage. And just like Luke said a little bit ago, they will, you know, it'll be what they did to Harold Ford all over again.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, they're already leaking stuff about Obama's thing with his financier guy, saying he's a slumlord and stuff. We'll see how that plays out. Anyway, I'm going to go, Bob.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
Okay, Bob.
Bye now. And I'll tell you what. We'll take a little break as we consider what Kevin said, and I think it kind of deserves a little bit of a mature consideration. We'll take a little break. Before we do that, though, a little reminder, a stunning little headline. Layoffs coming and in large numbers, survey finds. Now, granted, Wall Street managed to crank out another day of gains today. Modest, I suppose. 100 and some odd points. Not much. But 2 days in a row. And it, as is the wont of Wall Street, well, everything's okay on Wall Street. We have a healthy, robust economy and everything's going well. Floating on a bubble. Cruising along on a soap bubble and just thinking you're having a high old time. Corporate executives are poised to start making substantial cutbacks in their staffing, according to a new forecast by employment consulting and legal firm Career Protection. In fact, the firm is predicting a 37% increase in layoffs this year. 37% increase in layoffs this year over last year, based on a survey of more than 1,300 corporate executives and senior level officials that was conducted earlier this month. The layoff forecast registers as the worst in the last 5 years, according to Career Protection officials. They also indicated that the firm has already been inundated with inquiries from employees at a number of companies that announced layoffs earlier this month, including but not limited to Bear Stearns, Chrysler, Citigroup, Ford, Covidien, General Motors, IndyMac, and Sprint Nextel. What's disturbing out of that? That is the broad spectrum of the entire blessed economy. Is there a silver lining? Well, if there's a silver lining, it's that the executive surveyed said they do intend to provide severance packages to employees whose positions are eliminated. Oh, sweet. This is just going to be too much fun. Thank you. Thank you, free marketeers. Thank you, maximum capitalists. Thank you, libertarians and Randians and objectivists. Thank you, neocons. Can we won't bother with brother, can you spare a dime? You can't give a dime because you don't give a damn. This is the Head-On Radio Network. This is The Horn, America's listener-supported liberal voice. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. If you're on hold, stay that way, please. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah.
I can't give you anything but love. Baby, that's the only thing I'm plenty of. Baby, treat my wife, scheme my wife, babe. You should do that. My love, my love, my love, happiness, and I grant all the things that you have probably gee, I'd like to see you looking swell for baby. Baby, let me blow. Diamond bracelet, one boy toss herself, my little baby does my own. Tell that lucky day, your lucky day, you know quite well. Baby, baby, I can give you anything but love.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Five UAW Local 3520 bargaining committee members fired by Freightliner in April of 2007 after a one-day strike are getting some support now from the labor movement. The UAW International isn't supporting the workers' efforts to get their jobs back because the one-day strike was authorized only by the local and not by the international UAW. South Carolina AFL-CIO President Donna DeWitt supports these five UAW bargaining committee members fired by Freightliner, and she says they deserve some solidarity from the entire labor movement.
They weren't happy with the contract offer, and they were standing up for their rights. And I don't know exactly what happened with UAW, but all I know is there are five UAW members and officers of a local that have been out of work now going on 10 months. So I would appeal to everyone to reach out to help raise funds for these folks and their efforts to be rehired. You know, they need their jobs back.
The fired UAW Freightliner workers are visiting several cities, including Detroit, Chicago, and San Francisco, to tell their story and get support. To support these workers, you can go to www.justiceforfive.com to donate money to the Justice for Five Solidarity Fund. A deal reached between the Grammys and striking writers is music to the ears of the music industry. Jesse Russell reports.
With album sales declining year over year, the music industry can use any help it can get. One of the key promotional outlets for many artists is being tapped for a Grammy. Until Monday, that event was in jeopardy as writers continue a strike that is going on 3 months. The Writers Guild of America reached an interim agreement with the Recording Academy that will allow writers to work on the show. The Grammys are scheduled for February 10th. With the interim agreement reached on the Grammys, the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences are taking it as a sign that an agreement can be reached in time for their annual award show, the Oscars. The writers walked off the job in early November, and one of the primary sticking points is compensation for work that appears on emerging new media.
New Jersey is moving a step closer to passing family leave legislation. The controversial legislation passed the Senate committee on Monday by a vote of 8-6. If it succeeds, the act would provide 6 weeks of paid leave to care for a newborn or a seriously ill family member. A tax on workers' salaries would fund the leave pay of up to a maximum of $524 per week. Now here's Jesse Russell with today's economic report.
Foreclosures broke records in 2007, jumping by 75%. That equals nearly 405,000 homeowners losing their homes. In December of 2000, the foreclosure filings increased a whopping 97% over December of 2006. California was hit the worst in 2007, with 250,000 foreclosure filings. Michigan, already suffering from the job losses in the manufacturing sector, received a second punch in the gut, with 47,000 homes being lost.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
All right, we're back. 26 minutes before the hour, this is Head On. We're moving toward the close of tonight's program. Let's see if this person is still with us. Hi, who have I got?
Hello.
Hey, Juanita.
Hey.
How are you?
All right. How are you?
Pretty good.
I'd like to tell you about, I've been getting a lot of insight from the View program.
Oh, the View? Yes.
Uh-huh. It's really kind of interesting because I didn't watch it for years and years, and then when Rosie was on, I started watching it again. And her and Elizabeth, you know, have a head-to-head confrontation a lot of times, but they claim to be friends. But anyway, it's totally different now, and I find it very interesting that, you know, they got the two blacks on, and, you know, Whoopi and the other girl. And the other girl, you know, everybody's talking about how dumb she is, but I see her as kind of like she's just open, very open, and she's ready to learn. And you see Elizabeth's not getting her points in like she did with Rosie, because you see her putting her little political things, you know, that I'm sure she got because everybody else is doing it. And she's been putting like the race, trying to put the race issue on between Obama and Hillary, and she's got it like making it look like Obama's so gracious and, you know, Hillary's so terrible. And anyway, both Whoopi and the other girl are saying that they didn't consider what either one of the Clintons saying was racist, and even what they said about what he said about Jackson. But the other day, Whoopi said, "Okay, Bill, now let Hillary run her own campaign." Said you. But what was interesting to me today was I watched the debate last night, and I didn't see the snub. I didn't see a Barack. I saw, you know, Hillary in the audience. And I didn't know if Barack was there or not. But they were talking about it today on The View. And Elizabeth was saying, well, you know, he just probably has been so hurt and so, because he's been so gracious, you know, with all the things that they've been throwing out on him. And Whoopi and the other girl said, look, he's been saying some things about her, too. Said, they've been down on them too, that it works both ways. And they were saying that if he didn't eventually speak to her or, you know, acknowledge her, that they were saying, Barack, you know, you're winning. Be gracious. Don't be. I just thought it was really interesting.
I got to tell you, Juanita. I'm not inclined to watch The View.
No, I'm not asking you about that.
So, I mean, I just don't know.
I just know that she has her talking points, and she's not getting them across like she did.
Oh, yeah, Elizabeth Hasselbeck?
Because it was more combative between her and Rosie. But with them, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, we're on your side. But, boy, every time she tries to bring in the race card, and makes it look like it's all racist.
Well, but that's the thing, and I think Kevin pointed it out so very, very very well, we can't evade the fact that race is going to inform voter decisions in some segments of this culture. Okay?
For sure.
It's
for
just
sure.
gonna. Mm-hmm. I don't intend this as being mean. I don't intend this as being critical, but even people who were raised in the Deep South and are subject to using the language of the Deep South. And again, I say this gently. You just referred Juanita to whoever the other black woman is, and Whoopi Goldberg.
I don't remember her name.
I don't either. But you just referred to them as girls. They're full grown.
Well,
they're full grown women.
I'm sorry. I didn't.
No. I'm not. Please don't apologize.
I didn't mean it.
Juanita, stop.
I want to call them all girls. You know.
Juanita, stop.
Juanita, girl, you know.
Juanita, please listen. I know you didn't mean it, and everybody listening knows you didn't mean it. But boy or girl as a referent to a full grown, absolutely mature African American adult is demeaning. And you didn't mean it that way, and you didn't use it that way, but the point I'm trying to get across here is that the language itself is pervaded with racism. Does that make any sense? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see your point. I stand corrected, you know.
I'm not correcting you. I'm not correcting you, Juanita.
I'm very careful. I don't even use the N word. Even I don't even use it because those things can slip out. And I know that the last time I went to visit any of my relatives up in Georgia, it's just a common saying. You know,
Juanita, I was covering a court case once upon a time, and a very distinguished African American lawyer. This was in West Virginia. A very distinguished African-American lawyer was representing a young man, and he was well-known in the legal community. And this little county where he was doing his, where the case was taking place, real backwater. The judge was a Republican, and I would hazard a guess, a bit of a racist. And this African-American lawyer stood up, proper deference to the court, and the judge looked at him and said, why, and said the guy's name, not going to say it here, boy, I ain't seen you in a coon's age. And
yes.
Just sitting in the courtroom, I put my head in my hands, and I could not believe what I had just heard come out of a judge's mouth.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think he meant it as, there's certainly no proof that he meant it as an overt racial slur, but it is institutional. It is embedded in the language is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
And I use that as an example with regard to what Kevin was just talking about and what you, in turn, are talking about. And the fact is, race is going to be enough of an issue in this campaign without the candidates helping it along.
Well, I was just thought it was interesting that they both, you know, were letting her know that, that they thought he was just as wrong if he did that. They said they didn't know if he did afterwards. Maybe afterwards he spoke to her. See, I didn't see that happen. They were just talking about it today. And the point of my conversation is that I see Elizabeth giving the talking points that you hear on the other news, so-called news shows. And I believe they are trying to make it a race issue. And
it is being, that's my point. It's being played for all it can possibly be played for, Juanita. And it is.
Well, they're still getting out of it. It's gonna be that because there is a
until such time as we reject it, it will be.
Well, I hope so, and I know that some people I know you said one night, and I didn't get to call in, but you were saying something about what good did anything do, and I, the only thing I could say was for myself was I changed. That's the only thing I can relate to.
Right, and it,
hopefully society has changed, and I believe it has changed.
It has changed.
Ways.
It has changed.
But there's a little hidden thing, see.
It has changed in large part,
mm-hmm.
but the voting booth is supposedly a very private place.
Right.
And public, and what scares me is public pronouncements of America's turn away from its profoundly racist past may not make it all the way into that privacy.
Yeah, now say something about, you were talking about the Coon deal. I've worked with, you know, I've become friends with a lot of black people because I work with them. And I think that's what I thank God that I got to know so many wonderful people, and like I, you know, just buried my best friend, and you know she was a freedom fighter, and you can talk, you get to know people, and you can talk, and I one of my friends, I said just something to her about did she know what Coon meant. And she didn't even know what it meant. She was raised in the South. She had no idea that that's what a lot of white people, you know, call it coon hunting. And she had no idea. So everybody doesn't know all those things, even no matter what race they are.
Because it is embedded in the mm-hmm. culture and embedded in the language. Exactly. Exactly.
But,
so please, I hope. I would never in a million years correct or criticize you, Juanita.
No, I
just heard that, and the little hairs inside my ears went.
When I was talking, I felt bad about saying the two black girls, and I didn't even think about the girls. I was thinking, now, wait a minute, I'm not saying this right. But I thank you for correcting me. I stand corrected.
Well, that was not what
I
it
mean,
was intended. It
kind of hurts, but it doesn't really.
It was not intended.
It doesn't really hurt me that bad.
It was not intended as correction.
Well,
it was intended.
But
as,
I like to learn. I like to better myself, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Juanita, I appreciate it, and I'm not. If you go to sleep thinking I was correcting or being mean to you,
I understand, and I know that. You got upset a while ago, but what Kevin's saying is
talking the truth.
I totally agree with you.
If I got frustrated or dismayed, it's not at Kevin. It's because I'm recognizing the truth that Kevin
it's
is
not
speaking.
Kevin, I know it's you're upset about realizing what's really going on.
If
perspective.
If something like that keeps us from having a qualified individual like Barack Obama. Or if some level of the, and because we still have God knows we still have institutionalized misogyny in this culture. If Hillary Clinton's gender keeps her from being president, or Barack Obama's race, so-called, keeps him from being president,
mm-hmm.
then America is a dead thing. America is
of
a
course.
Dumb thing. America
of
is
course.
An irretrievably broken thing, Juanita.
Of course. Well, you know,
if the only person who's
I'd be concerned about Barack. You know, he's already had to have Secret Service then, way when he first started.
CBS had to turn off blogging on all stories relating to Barack Obama because of the little Klansmen scurrying out from under the baseboards.
That's my concern right there.
Sure. But it's not gonna prevent me from voting for him. It's gonna make me more likely. It's a certainty that if he is the nominee, I will go out and vote for him.
Definitely. And I was talking to my son tonight, and I said, "Well, did you know that Hillary, you know, won Florida?" He said, "Yeah." He said that I didn't vote for her, you know. Well, I'm sure he and his friend, they are for Barack, you know. And of course, I was liking Edward's message, I felt it was more forthright. But listen, we're blessed on our side, and they sure are not on the other side. They're really cursed. They've got terrible candidates. Terrible. That goes without saying, right?
Yeah, it does.
But I did see a little blip about, you were talking about McCain.
Yeah.
And Lieberman.
Right.
Lieberman said he's not gonna, he's ruling out running with McCain.
I'll believe it when I see it. Juanita, we're almost at the end. I gotta roll along there.
Okay. And I love you, and we just have to keep on keeping on trying to make this country better.
Amen. Amen, Juanita.
Better than ourselves.
All right. You take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Night.
Oh, I hate it when I feel like I'm being a bastard. I didn't mean to. Kevin writes in as a follow-up. He says, I know Juanita didn't mean anything by her statement. Bill Clinton didn't mean anything. It was just a comparison. Just like John Edwards won South Carolina back in 2004, and it didn't get him the nominee. Yeah. I understand. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. With regard to this issue, our friend David in South Carolina says, media drummed this up. I never heard a racist statement, although media portrayed them as such. When I was surfing through TV channels, I did see Tucker Carlson smirk as he spoke about how the Democratic Party was now divided due to Clinton's remarks. He also echoed the comment that resonated around the Obama campaign, this thinly veiled threat to keep his voters home on Election Day. Question is, who planted the rumor? The Republican National Committee? Rove? Who? Thanks, David. And finally, from our good friend Cindy, I think America is too full of racists to ever elect Obama. The Republicans are dying for the Democrats to field him as our candidate, or Hillary. Either one, and they're waiting in the wings to bring it on, says Cindy, still for Edwards. At this point in time, that's where it looks like my ceremonial vote goes in May of 2008. And one last little story to close out the night. Just because, I don't know, it's all part of a piece, if you will. I revisit the issue of the appointment of judges. Last night, during that hateful, moribund, little pathetic excuse for oratory, George W. Bush said, and I about dropped my drink when I heard it, many good judges are still awaiting confirmation of the Senate, and I call on the Senate to give them each an up or down vote. Took a lot of damn nerve to say that, but I guess that's all that man is nerve, because he ain't 100% brains, that's for sure. I can't name the number of issues that have come before the Senate of the United States that the Republican Party has denied an up or down vote on. But, see, you and me, working people out there, we don't damned well deserve an up or down vote on something like the Employee Free Choice Act. No, no. No, because that might empower working people. That might actually increase working people's wages. That might actually go towards solving the health care crisis in this country. So we damned well can't have it. But his little right-wing thugs waiting to get onto the bench, they deserve an up or down vote. I say that because of this headline. Federal judge allows Smithfield Foods lawsuit against union. You heard me right. Federal judge allows Smithfield Foods lawsuit against union. Now, time after time after time on this program and others, you've heard about the labor action in Tar Heel, North Carolina, against Smithfield Foods. Smithfield Foods runs a little hog slaughtering operation that you can smell 15 miles before you ever see it, at which 32,000 hogs are slaughtered per day on an assembly line. The people who work at Smithfield Foods are mostly women, minorities, and the very desperately poor. pregnant women in their eighth month of pregnancy have been compelled to stand on the line, sticking a razor-sharp butcher knife into the abdominal cavity of hog after hog after hog after hog. Do the math. There's 32,000 hogs that go through there a day, and a workforce of something like 2,000. Figure out how fast that line goes with those hogs hanging by their trotters. And the International Food and Commercial Workers Union and other affiliated organizations have moved heaven and earth to try to get representation, to try to get organization for those people who do that filthy, filthy job. And it is a filthy, filthy job. Standing ankle deep in gore and guts and feces. Yeah, it's a filthy job. Shin deep, knee deep. Well, the unions have been trying and trying and trying to get justice for those workers. And those workers have responded in an attempt to stand up for themselves. The si se puede. Yes, we can. Of the Latino worker. A federal judge says Smithfield Foods can proceed in its racketeering lawsuit against a union trying to organize workers at the company's hog slaughterhouse in North Carolina. Smithfield, Virginia-based company filed a lawsuit in October against the United Food and Commercial Workers Union and several other defendants. The company alleges the union's so-called smear campaign is taking away Smithfield's ability to conduct business the way it chooses. So this federal judge, Robert H. Payne, or I don't know, maybe it's not H., Robert Payne, U.S. District Judge, Virginia, Eastern District thereof, held that statutes used to catch and punish organized crime, the mafia, the Cosa Nostra, the Black Hand, can be used to try to destroy an effort by people who work up to their knees in blood to have a little bit of justice, a modicum of dignity in their workplace. Robert Payne, look him up. He's another one of those good and noble judges who deserved an up or down vote. He was an appointment of the Bush family. Of course he was. Only a damn Bushy, a loyal Bushy, would figure that a statute designed to stop the mob would be applicable to working people trying to stop abuse against themselves. Shame on him. And shame on all the people in this country who ever cast a vote for a Bush. That's it. That's the show. I'm assuming at this point in time that we will not have, I thought we were going to have a live Strictly Confidential, but apparently Peter Godbold, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host's voice, has not come back into its useful, sonorous, melodious range. John Fox is also out of pocket, so this will be the end of the live broadcast day. Thanks, everybody. Hope you'll be here tomorrow night for prayer meeting. Join us Wednesday also for Guy James at 3 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. for Mark Levine. We're hoping Peter's voice will be back in fine form by then as well, and John Fox will have his internet connection back hot again. Many thanks to the many dedicated people at Coal River Mountain Watch Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They're busting it every day trying to create a solution for a sustainable future. Why don't you be part of the solution too? And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Chew on that one for a little bit. Thanks, everybody. Felt like a great show. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 113 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. We are also brought to you by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, and we appreciate their support very much. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Tuesday, February the 5th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Tuesday night, which is February the 5th, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are welcome to call and participate and talk to myself and to the guest whom I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that, and you'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333, and it rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. I do try to check the email during the breaks when we get to them. We occasionally do get to breaks in the show, much to the producer's horror, but we sometimes get to them. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links there also to the guests' websites, and you'll find links there to the chat room, which is active as we speak, and you'll find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can help support the network by clicking on a PayPal button, and so much more at headonradionetwork.com. You can find out about all of the other progressive programming on this network, of which I'm only a very small part, but proud to be so. You'll find links there also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You know, it's so strange with Bob gone. I do miss him terribly. Bob will be back Thursday evening, by the way. But it's just so strange for me. I know you guys are listening to the replay stream, but as I said last night, in my headphones on this end, it's absolute silence. And then all of a sudden the theme music starts. It's like, instead of the curtain slowly opening and you sort of transition from Bob, you suddenly realize it's showtime. So, oh, Lord, I'll be glad when that man gets back. By the way, we heard from John today, John Fox down in Australia, he's our host who handles environmental issues and so many other things. We heard he's our network engineer also. From the audio perspective, we depend on him greatly for that. We heard from John, and John's high-speed broadband problems are fairly much resolved at this point, and John intends to also join us Thursday evening. So with Bob being back, and I'll be with you Thursday evening, and with John being with us Thursday evening, we're going to have a regular, standard Head-On Radio Network evening Thursday evening. Now, I'll tell you now that tomorrow evening, Bob will still be out of pocket. In fact, he's not going to arrive at the airport till probably 6:30 or 7. I have a fairly